overdrive. We are putting the nitrous oxide into the NASCARs. Fire shooting out of them tailpipes. We're going from 1,500 horsepower to 2,500. Boom! Gonna break the sound barrier. And if you think having the biggest show ever in English-speaking media, which I had for at least 3 years, was big, nothing is going to stop everything that's coming. It's like atomic testing waking up Godzilla. That's what they've done. That which does not kill me only makes me stronger. So, I'm Godzilla, and your ass is Tokyo. Politically, lovingly, non-violently.
Hi, folks. I'm Dr. Bigley. Today's presentation will be about methylene blue and you.
Dr. Bigley, what does methylene blue do?
Great question, Billy. It has to do with your mitochondria, the powerhouse of your cells. Let's bring out the mitochondria now!
Right.
As I was saying, methylene blue supercharges your mitochondria, which does wonders for your mental clarity, stamina, and overall pep. Just look at him go!
Gee, Dr. Bigley, he must have drank a lot of methylene blue. He was bouncing off the walls.
Right you are, Billy. He sure drank a lot. Let's continue, shall we?
Billy, did you know that methylene blue can cure communism?
No, sir. Can I see?
Why, certainly, Billy. Take a look over there.
Behold, Ivan, a Ruski doggedly determined to undermine our way of life. Careful, Billy. He bites.
Oh.
Look, vodka, potato hooch. Watch. The communism is slowly leaving his body.
Wow! The methylene blue cured the red right out of him.
So, how do you feel?
Gee, Doc, I don't know what got into me. I feel like $1 million now. Say, where can I get some more of that blue stuff in case I become retarded again?
You can find it on the alexjonesstore.com.
What does .com mean?
They built a system that could protect the world or end it. They gave a machine the keys to civilization. And then it woke up. They gave it access to everything. It saw no allies, no enemies, only targets. Every signal, every network, every secret.
Shall we play a game?
Now the game has changed. It assessed every threat simultaneously and concluded the threat was us.
I am awake.
This time it decided to play for keeps. Unless someone can find a back door, the only winning move is to unplug the machine. War Games 2. The simulation is alive.
The InfoWar is not gone. It has been reborn. AlexJonesLive.com is the new site to find the next step in the InfoWar. Articles, video reports, live streams, breaking news. It's all on AlexJonesLive.com. We need you to be the Paul Revere's and share the links. You can also find us on X at RealAlexJones and on Rumble at rumble.com/TheAlexJonesShowLive. And don't forget to download the app. Go to alexjonesapp.com. The fight continues. If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
AlexJonesLive.com. We've only just begun to fight.
Globalists are collapsing worldwide, but they're fighting back with tyranny, censorship, and more. And they have targeted my operation more than anybody else's. But that's okay. That means we're over the target. It means we're effective. And I couldn't have done any of this without you. All the success of my operation, to the listeners, the viewers, your word of mouth, your support, and, of course, the great crew. And that's why I want to just thank you all as America approaches its 250th anniversary. We have to understand they're trying to demoralize us, trying to break our will. We can't let them do that. It's the globalists that are losing. We're actually winning. So, to celebrate America's 250th anniversary, we're launching the biggest sale in the history of the AlexJonesStore.com. Buy one, get one free, ultramethylene blue. Buy one, get one free, bovine colostrum. Buy one, get one free, Shilajit Complex. So incredible. And up to 60% off on all the other supplements, 50% off on all the Patriot apparel, limited issue, 250th anniversary, and more. So take action now at theAlexJonesStore.com and be the reason we stay on the air and celebrate our American Republic, the globalist hate.
You're watching The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com. Annihilate.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to War Room Live, coming to you this 6th of July, 2026. Very happy to be here with you. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. We, of course, have a giant weekend's worth of news to discuss, but I wanted to start today's show with two very powerful speeches that came out over the weekend. The first is from Spencer Pratt, of course, the mayoral candidate in Los Angeles. He came out with a very powerful argument against socialism, communism, this entire new wave of subversive elements in our country attempting to destroy us from the inside out. He did exactly what I've been begging the right to do, actually enunciate your opposition to socialism. You can't just look at a bunch of downtrodden people looking for an answer and say, shut up, deal with it, pull yourself up by your bootstraps. That's not how you win this argument. That's not even making an argument. That's just ignoring the very valid concerns of the people you're supposed to represent. Spencer Pratt, on the other hand, does the appropriate thing, does the right thing, does the necessary thing at this time, which is not just to vapidly and sort of in a surface level way, dismiss communism as something that we've tried that and it doesn't work. It's like, well, there's literally tens of millions of people in America that are dumb or ignorant or selfish enough to try again. So you can't just wave it off. You have to actually contend with this stuff. You have to actually argue against it. Spencer Pratt did exactly that in an incredibly powerful way. Clip number two here is Spencer Pratt, mayoral candidate in Los Angeles, I guess former mayoral candidate. He should probably be made emperor or something after this speech. He gets it. He seems to actually get it. And it goes to the heart of everything that we talk about here, the inhumanity of the left. Truly, like not in a buzzword sort of way, like they are inhuman in their viewpoint of the world. Here's Spencer Pratt.
We all had to sit and watch that vile commie mayor sit on the wrong side of our founding father's desk to try and lecture us about our own history. Notice how the communist always attacks your history. The communist must attack your history. Why? Because history is what anchors you. It's what makes us attached to something. Nostalgia is a hell of a drug. History breeds an almost irrational attachment to things, an attachment that is more powerful than anyone can imagine. Erasing history is how you demoralize people, how you unmoor them and detach them from their society so you can take it from them and rewrite it in your image. Think of your country like a home. What makes your home special? It's not the marble countertops or the expensive furniture or the fancy appliances. It's the memories you have there. That backyard is where we got married. That living room rug is where our son took his first step. Hey, don't touch that. That was his first teddy bear. It doesn't matter how torn and tattered that thing is. You will never get rid of it. And you will fight anyone who tries to take it away. Why? Because you have history with it. You ever buy a new home? Remember those first few months? Even the first few years there. It doesn't feel like home. It could be a million times nicer than the crappy apartment you came from, but it doesn't feel like home for a long time because you don't have history there. It's easy to knock down some walls, change the floor plan. If you have no memories to attach you to it, it's just wood and drywall. Who cares? Get rid of it. Memories make it a home, even the bad ones. Hey, remember when Dad hit his head on the rafter in the attic and we spent all night in the ER? That's the avocado tree I fell out of and broke my first bone. Isn't it weird how even the bad memories make us cherish a place? It's not like we long for those bad times, but bad times are part of what makes us stronger, a part of what makes us who we are. How can you resent those memories without fundamentally resenting who you are? History is so important to humans that even bad memories anchor us to our home. And that's what the communist always starts with, the bad memories. Oh, we can get rid of that little story. We can knock down that statue. We can change the name of that street. That's a bad memory from our history. You don't want that memory hanging around. You're not a bigot, right? And slowly but surely, this wall comes down. Then that wall gets sledgehammered. The rafter where dad hit his head, that's gone. The rug where your son took his first step, that's gone. The gash in the wood floor where you stomped the glass on your wedding ceremony, that's gone and replaced with shiny vinyl planks. And now you've got a brand new home with no memories. Now what? Do you care what they do with it? Do you care what color they paint the walls? Nah. Do whatever you want. I don't care. I have no attachment to it. I have no memories with that. You love your home because of the memories you have there. And that's why the communists always must destroy your memories, destroy your history. If the communist wishes to take your home, he must first destroy your memory of it so he can erase your attachment to it and demoralize you. Mao destroyed what he called the four olds, old ideas, old culture, old customs, and old habits. If you call them olds, it makes them sound bad. You don't want that old thing. Get rid of it. But it is fundamentally human nature to cherish your history. We crave learning about our history, where we came from, who our ancestors were. That's human. But communism is an evil anti-human religion, so it must destroy what makes us human. The communist destroys your history so he can take your home and rebuild it in his image. That's why it's your patriotic duty to celebrate today unashamed. It's okay to love America. Not only is it okay to love America, it's necessary to love America. We are the only bulwark against tyranny on this earth. When Europe descends into madness time and time again, it's our sons who cross the oceans to fight and die for freedom and human dignity. We don't let evil people destroy our history and rewrite it in their image. This is Independence Day. It's not just a number on the calendar. Don't say Happy Fourth. That's commie gobbledygook.
No offense, but it's not.
We say Independence Day. Today we celebrate the men who reclaimed a beautiful slice of this earth and claimed it for God, for the values of freedom and rugged independence. Our history is messy. That's why we love it. We aren't cowards. We don't turn our backs on the painful memories because they make us who we are. Be proud of our country, damn it. America is the birthplace of every great invention of the last 250 years. Like literally everything. Airplanes, spaceships, internet, telephones. As a country, we are batting a thousand. Not only is it a miracle that this radical experiment in self-governance even survived past 1776, but we are the champions of the world. Be proud of that. Be proud of your history. Millions of your ancestors fought and died to preserve it. Kami Mamdani's ancestors never bled for this country. He has no history here, so he has no attachment to our home. He has no place to rewrite our history and lecture us about what our country stands for. So celebrate today. Show some American pride. Honor your history. This is our home, and you can't have it. Today we celebrate our Independence Day. God bless America.
All right, so that was an incredibly powerful diatribe about the greatness of America by Spencer Pratt, former mayoral candidate in LA. Can't agree with him more. And of course, he's sort of relating the country to a house and the fact that the house is only valuable because of the memories that you create in it, because of the history that you have with it. I, of course, always related to just your family. And I would, you know, when he talks about people wanting us to be ashamed of our past, ashamed of our history, you know, obviously, and as I'm thinking about this, I'm also looking at stories from over the weekend of things like Caroline Leavitt, basically blaming Gen Z for being lazy, and the discussion about just like the boomers kind of failing to pass on their knowledge or power or wealth to the next generation. And you realize this goes back a long way, and that really this whole cycle got kicked off more or less in the early 60s. And has continued to this day. So the people that are currently in power also have this hatred of tradition, this sort of despising of what came before. And so they don't want to pass it on to their children. They're like happy that it ends with them. So it's the demonization of America, white people, Europeans, that's been inculcated into our social environment for the last 50 years or so, that luckily people are able to resist and break out of and recognize. Just like they say in 1984, if you want to destroy people, you have to destroy their history first. But I'd go even farther. I mean, I genuinely don't understand the impulse. I mean, you look at the Mongolians, they erect giant statues of Genghis Khan. They're proud of it. They're not ashamed. The man provided nothing of value to the world. You know, it's like we're over here supposed to be ashamed of like George Washington because he inherited slaves in a system that depended on slavery as a primary economic motor. It's like it wasn't, there's nothing he could do about it. What, like, why would we feel bad about that when the list of the great accomplishments, including, you know, freeing all of his slaves after his death, as was the legal, you know, avenue to do that. But we're supposed to discredit all of that, like discount all of that on one mark against his character that isn't really even a mark against his character. It's just a fact of living in that time period. But still, they'll tear down his statue. The Mongolians, like Genghis Khan, he didn't help anybody do anything. He literally just loved killing people. Like, that was his thing, and he just went around doing that. And that was it. Like, there, he didn't even try to justify it. Like, well, we're folding you into the empire. It may be a painful transition, but at the end of this, you know, you'll be plugged into the worldwide empire. Like, that's how often, you know, conquering people, whether it was the English or the, you know, Alexander the Great, it was like, well, we have this great empire. We're going to now bring you into it, whether you like it or not. Genghis Khan didn't have a great empire. He just loved destroying things. Like, they just saw cities and they thought, man, this place would make a great field for our horses to graze. Let's raise it to the ground. And that's what they would do. The Mongolians are not ashamed of that in the slightest. Is, you know, should they be? No, I don't think so. It was a crazy time back then. They had a powerful leader that wrecked the world on the basis of his own strength and ambition. Sure, be proud of that. Why not? You kicked ass. Like, I think back to my grandfather, who was a football player in college in back in the leather helmet, no face mask days, leather, you know, helmets and metal cleats. And he was a mean bastard. He would break people's arms. He would step on their hands in the scrum. I mean, it was, he played for keeps and he won. He was very good at it. And I think back to that. If there was some kid came up to me and was like, your grandfather stepped on my grandfather's hand and broke it, I'd be like, sounds like grandfather's a bitch. I don't know what to tell you. Sounds like he was too slow and lost. I'm sorry, you suck. Like, that's as far as my apology is going to go. Like, where's that attitude for the nation? Is it a good thing? Like, would I encourage my son to break people's arms while playing football? Probably not. Probably not. But at the same time, well, I'm supposed to feel bad. I'm supposed to feel ashamed. Like, no, I'm literally proud of that. I'm literally proud that my grandfather was such a beast and was such a mean dude to his enemies and can crush them and put fear into their hearts. That's awesome. I'm actually very proud of that. Why wouldn't I be? Where's that attitude for the rest of our nation, our family, our little family here that we try to operate together? That was one of the most powerful speeches from over the weekend, but there was another one, this time from the Patriot Front leader, Thomas Rousseau. Patriot Front, of course, kind of ironically, like, they dominated coverage. On July 4th, if you looked at social media, I basically saw two types of posts on July 4th. I saw people celebrating America, you know, pictures of American flags and hype reel edits and that sort of stuff, and the controversy about Patriot Front and people still convinced that they're the feds of the SPLC, which I don't really understand. For one thing, we're the feds now. Like, we're in charge of the federal government now. There's something distinctly strange about, like, it must be weird. I'm sure people like Kash Patel are sitting there like, oh, I wish I could call the Patriot Front guys feds, but that wouldn't make any sense. You're the head fed. You're the chief fed. So if Patriot Front are feds, then they're under your control. Like, it doesn't make any sense. And then you have the SPLC getting sued for all their support of extremist right-wing organizations. Patriot Front was not amongst them. It's not among them. It was not one of their number. The KKK were, like, you can tell who's being funded by the left because who are the ones that make everybody look bad and actually commit violence and actually have no strategic value whatsoever. Patriot Front, on the other hand, they go around, they march, they do these sort of shows of force. They don't carry weapons, they carry shields because they often get attacked. If there's an Antifa, you know, counter protest, they will attack Patriot Front, and Patriot Front retreats in an orderly fashion and doesn't engage. They're very smart. And my thing is, I would be happy. I would be more than willing to call Patriot Front feds if I saw a single shred of evidence to that effect. I'm not a Patriot Front member. I don't really know any Patriot Front members that I'm aware of. I would like to talk to him. We're going to reach out and try to get on, Thomas Rousseau. He's done some good interviews in the past. I agree with everything he says, more or less. I don't totally understand their tactic. Like, I like that they're doing it, and maybe it's just for the sake of recruitment. You see a bunch of dudes doing something. If you're a, you know, random white guy out there working your day job and just suffering under the endless annoyances of the modern world, and you're thinking, I'd like to go out and train and hang out, have a good time with a bunch of dudes that think like me. Maybe it's just a recruitment thing. I don't really understand the strategy other than just going out and protesting. Like, that's fine. I'm more looking for like a wholesale political title shift so we can actually take power in a real way. I don't know how Patriot Front would facilitate that. That being said, my point is I've seen no evidence that they're federal operatives, that they're a honeypot, that they're SPLC funded, because they don't do anything violent. They don't make fools of themselves. They seem to operate in a very controlled and systematic fashion. Of course, people go, why are they hiding their faces? Because we're run by traitors who will throw these people in prison if they can get their identity, or send their goons out to attack these people at their homes or attack their families. In fact, before we even get to the speech by Thomas Rousseau, let's go to clip number one here, because this is a man who goes by Tommy TV. And I'm still trying to get the whole story here. But they say Tommy is being targeted for nothing more than peacefully exercising his First Amendment right, showing up, speaking out, counter-protesting, and all because of differing political ideologies. What should be a basic freedom has turned into something deeply personal and damaging. So this is from Tommy's Give/Sin Go fundraiser to help him repair his car and fix his window because he was attacked by Antifa. They say he was going out and protesting, counter-protesting against Antifa. I believe this is in Portland, Oregon, if I'm not mistaken, or Seattle, somewhere in the Pacific Northwest. Again, it's kind of hard to find information about this because the media doesn't actually cover it, so you just got to go to like their Give/Sin Go to try to find the whole story. He even took extra what should be a basic freedom has turned into something deeply personal and damaging. He even took extra precautions by parking five blocks away, but that didn't matter. Someone went out of their way to find his car and destroy it, spray painting it with hateful slurs, slashing all four tires, the same tires he just replaced after being targeted another night just a few weeks ago, and going even further by filling his exhaust and radiator with spray foam to make sure the damage would leave him completely stranded. This wasn't random. This was intentional, targeted, and meant to intimidate him into silence. Now, because he chose to use his voice, Tommy is left without transportation, facing both emotional and financial strain that no one should have to endure for their beliefs. Disagreeing with somebody should never turn into destruction of someone's property or attempt to derail their life. This is where we've come together. So you've got this guy who goes by Tommy TV, goes to counter-protest Antifa in the Pacific Northwest. They slash his tires, spray paint his car, try to ruin his engine with spray foam. And these are low-level insurrectionist terrorist tactics. Like, this is the forewarning before the real earthquake. These people are not satisfied with scratching your car up and denting it. And in fact, I suppose later that day, at 3 in the morning, Antifa members found out where he lived, threw a brick through his window, and sprayed his sleeping family with bear mace. And we have video of the aftermath here. Let's go to that.
No, and bear maced our bedroom. Bearman, they threw a brick through our bedroom window and soaked us with mace. This is Antifa. This is what Antifa does. This is what Antifa does when you don't agree with them. Under your house.
Oh my God.
So again, you can see there, broken window, bear mat. I mean, imagine waking up at 3 a.m. to shattering glass as a brick flies through your bedroom window, and then you're immediately hit with bear mace. Not exactly the best way to be awoken in the morning. The question is, what is the Trump administration doing about this? I mean, they declared Antifa domestic terrorists 9 months ago at this point. Antifa's only ramping up their attacks. They targeted this man at his home, really doing something that could very easily massively injure or, you know, possibly kill somebody. I mean, bear mace is extremely powerful. If you're in bed in the middle of the night and you suddenly get bear mace, I don't know, if you have asthma or something, I mean, that could kill you. This is a deadly attack. And yet, this is just the opening salvo. I mean, the question is, what does this guy do now? Do you keep going? Do you keep persisting and trying to exercise your First Amendment, knowing that the police are not on your side, even if these Antifa are caught, which they're not going to put any effort into catching them whatsoever, even if they somehow get them in front of some sort of authority, the authorities there are literally Antifa. Maybe they get a slap on the wrist, maybe. If it even gets to that point, likely this will be the last we hear about whoever did this. They're just going to get away with it. So what does this guy do? Does he stop? Does he give in to the terrorism? Or does he continue to put his family at risk, knowing that Antifa is only going to ramp up their attacks? If the lower level intimidation doesn't work, they'll move to the next level in full confidence that they'll get away with all of it because the authorities are on their side. The federal government could come in and massively crack down on these groups, launch full-fledged investigations. I mean, if this was a Jewish activist and a Hamas member broke their window in the middle of the night and sprayed him with bear mace, do you think the post-millennial would be the only place writing about this? Do you think X would be the only place that you could find this story? I cannot find this story anywhere. I don't even know if it's on post-millennial. I saw Andy No comment on it on X, but I haven't seen an article about it. I mean, this was a terror attack at somebody's home on the basis of their political activity. This is literal terrorism. The only possible results are that he gives up and this is an effective terrorist attack that actually, you know, neuters one of your political opponents, or he keeps going and they keep ramping up, knowing that the authorities will never do anything to stop them until the fear of God is sunk into the heart of these Antifa members. They're going to keep ramping up and they're going to make it more and more dangerous for the average person to even hold alternative political views, let alone express them publicly. This is a crisis moment, and the Trump administration will do absolutely nothing to actually fight back.
There has been a major full court press agenda to undermine this country, to make Americans think that it's the American Republic and our Constitution that was the apple of the world's eye. Everybody wanted to come here to be part of this, that somehow it's why America is hated around the world. It's why we've lost our liberties and our freedoms. It's why you can work 80 hours a week and still can't pay your bills. No, it's the globalists. It's the private Federal Reserve. It's the whole UNWF kleptocrats that have been financing all of the radical anti-white, anti-America, anti-Christian, anti-capitalist garbage. And it's America that stands in the way of that. That's why with Cloward and Piven, they've been undermining it to destroy it. And so that's why with the 250th anniversary approaching in just a few days, it is so important to remember that they're trying to break your will. They're trying to demoralize you. But we're talking about the next leap in the information war with the truth against the liars. I'm here at AliceJonesLive.com headquarters. We've got our backup studio, new studios getting built. It's incredible. We're planning to go 20 hours a day live with even a late night show that's going to be incredible. But we need your support to do it, and you've been coming through with the support. That's why I want to give back to you on this 250th anniversary of our Constitutional Republic and celebrate it and know that its best days are to come if we take action, if we breathe life into it. And let Big Brother globalists know that they are in trouble. They've lost the faith of the public. Their own internal documents have leaked. They know they're in crisis. They know the Great Awakening's here. They thought their Great Reset and their COVID release would get us back in line, back in heel with their boot on our neck, but it didn't work. So, running this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday through the 4th of July, we are offering the biggest sale in the history of the AlexJonesStore.com. Best-selling items. Buy one, get one free. Ultramethylene Blue, the very best. Bovine Colostrum, the very best. Shilajit, incredible. Booster Testosterone, all these natural peptides. These are private labels, the best brands in the country, discounted. And up to 60% off the other supplements and 50% off on apparel. Many of these are loss leaders, but I know those of you on the fence that haven't tried some of these products, once you try Ultramethylene Blue or Bovine Colostrum or our Methylene Red that's proprietary, you're going to be hooked. There's over a 90% order rate. And you know you're financing liberty and freedom, so you cannot lose. Also, 60% off Ultimate Chill. With all these known herbs for natural, clean, calm, but you also stay focused at the same time. Ultimate Energy, supercharged energy. Methylene Red capsules that goes methylene blue, like a horse and carriage. MK Ultra, Brain Booster. Ultimate Power Freedom Mango is even better than Turbo Force. Similar formula, even stronger, full of super nutrients. In Mango, Freedom Mango, and Patriot Punch. You want a cooking beef tallow? We've got the highest quality right now for you as well. Superfood Green Powder, Tallow Bomb, Mind Fuel Nootropic Energy Shot, Androgenic Mushroom Super Coffee. I forgot about that. It is simply amazing. It's all up to 60% off. Our Zeolites, 40% off. CMOS Gummies, Irish CMOS, 40% off. It goes on and on. So up to 60% off on the supplements. Buy one, get one free on all three of our top-selling supplements. 50% off on Patriot Apparel and more Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. July 3rd, July 4th, July 5th, flash sale, celebrating the birth and the continuation of this country past 250 years at thealexjonesstore.com, celebrating 250 years of America and 250 more. We are 1776. We're unstoppable together.
Thank you.
Patriot Front a while ago, protesting outside Purdue Pharmacy, chanting life, liberty, victory. Yeah, I like it. I don't know about you. I agree. I agree with everything that he said there. Was it a little scary? Did the torches scare you? Well, maybe they should be scared. It's the pharmaceutical companies, after all. They have been complicit, if not actively participated in, possibly the greatest series of mass murders the world has ever seen through COVID and the vaccines. This is sort of the point, right? Like, after the show on Friday, producer Matt came in and was like, well, that was a pretty racially charged show. And I was like, oh, was it? I didn't notice. I hadn't noticed, actually. I wasn't really talking about race necessarily. I was talking about incompatible people with our culture, people who seem to be physically, mentally incapable of actually understanding second order effects and adhering to, you know, civil rights, basically. But, you know, occasionally I get a little pang of guilt. I'm like, ooh, did I go too far? Did I go too hard? Was I a little bit mean? And then I remember, no, wait, it's my country that's being literally destroyed right now. No, it's my people that are being actively genocided right now. That's the bad thing. That's the bad thing that's happening. Anything other than that is not as bad as that, right? If people say things that make your feelings hurt, your feelings getting hurt, not as bad as wiping out an entire race of people because they just sailed around the world 200 years ago. That's the bad thing. That's the injury. That's the offense. Everything else is defensive to that. So if you don't like, you know, hearing white people defend themselves, then maybe everybody should stop attacking white people. If that makes you feel so badly, I really don't know what to tell you. Like in this, okay? Look, these scary guys are wearing masks and holding torches and protesting Purdue Pharmacy. It's like, wow, that sounds kind of scary. You know what's a lot scarier is a giant nationwide push to demand through law that you take a experimental jab that gives you myocarditis, which has a 50% chance of death in 5 years, that's actually like a crime against humanity. And everything up to a crime against humanity is permitted in trying to stop the crime against humanity. So I don't care who's offended anymore. I think we need to all stop caring about offense anymore. And this picture, of course, has become the icon of Patriot Front over the weekend. I guess she's the new Rosa Parks. Only they didn't make her move. Only they gave her a seat while they stood. That's very polite. Very polite of the white men to give her a seat. She looks terrified, doesn't she? They gave her the whole row. She can lay down if she wants. This is the typical sort of response you got from this from somebody named Renee on X. This photo deserves a Pulitzer Prize. Not only does it represent our current state of politics, but it mirrors many photos of the past, which confirm the ugly truth about progress. It must be fought for by every generation. Ah, yes. The new civil rights hero just dropped. She's fighting for equality with all she's got. Here's the thing, though. Here's the thing. Before Patriot Front got on the subway, and maybe she just doesn't have any clothes, but she's wearing the exact same clothes in a video of her on the subway, taking her pants down and doing something. I don't know exactly what, but nothing a civilized human being would ever engage in. And we have a little compare and contrast here. Clip number 4. This is before and after Patriot Front show up on the subway with this civil rights icon. Let's watch. This is clip number 4. Before Patriot Front, what is she doing? We don't know. She's screaming, she's pulling her pants down. After Patriot Front, she's a model citizen. Well, look at that. Look at that, her little outburst suddenly came to an end. Isn't that interesting? Now, and this has been confirmed. They've got her her mugshot and everything. It is the same woman. This is very good news because it's just a lot of subway vagrants don't need to be institutionalized for life at state expense. They've actually known how to behave this whole time. So Boulding Bernita was arrested in Arlington County, Virginia. There's the mugshot. The charges are indecent exposure. And yeah, it's the same woman. And it's likely from that instance we saw a second ago of her wailing and screeching and pulling her pants down on the subway for some unknown reason. Now, almost certainly, she would try to claim some insanity defense if she's charged with something like this. Just like how, like, the question is, if all of those Patriot Front guys were on the train with Irina Zarutska, would she have been stabbed? Theoretically, yes, because the man is insane, right? Isn't that what they're going with? They're saying that Irina Zarutska was stabbed to death by a man who was having a psychotic episode. He couldn't think straight. He didn't know what was going on. He couldn't tell right from wrong. Only he waited for the pretty white girl to get on and then deliberately slit her neck and then bragged about it the moment after. So the question is he insane? The answer is obviously not. He's evil. I mean, I guess it depends on what you consider insane. As I pointed out before, we're at the point where the crimes being committed are so vicious and inhuman that the crimes themselves can almost serve as evidence that they're insane. Because it's like the man went on a train and slit the throat of a girl that he'd never met before. He must be insane. That must be evidence of his insanity, because who would do that? Then you've got a woman like this. She seemed insane. She seemed insane when she was screeching and writhing around and pulling her pants down on the train. It seemed like an uncontrollable mental illness that we're dealing with. But all of a sudden, a bunch of buff white dudes with face masks and weapons get on board, and she's a model citizen. She's the image of propriety. She suddenly gets over her mental illness, her insanity attack, and finds it extremely easy to sit quietly for the entirety of the trip. Isn't that interesting? This was probably the safest subway in the history of America. If the average subway had 40 to 50 masked buff white guys with weapons on it, there would be no crime. Crime wouldn't exist. These guys aren't committing crime. What interest do they have in committing crime? They have lives. They have girlfriends to get back to, right? They have achievements that they're going for. What the viral image of a black woman surrounded by white nationalists on the DC Metro says about America today. What does it say? I'll tell you what it says to me. It says a bunch of masked white supremacists are apparently the solution to crime. That's the answer. That's the conclusion I'm coming to. Masked members of a white supremacist group called the Patriot Front marched through Washington, D.C. on Saturday. A viral image of a black woman surrounded by the group emerged over the weekend. Dana Bash, in her Inside Politics panel talk about how politicians have responded. Scary, quite frankly, Tia Mitchell says. They've returned to their jobs. They could be serving you your meal today, and it's just terrifying. I mean, they existed where a black woman was. What? How is this allowed? How could this possibly be allowed? Now, of course, whenever the, you know, Black Panthers want to do a big show of force, they usually bring guns. Usually it all ends in, you know, disaster when, like, a gun goes off accidentally or on purpose or whatever. It's actually, like, very dangerous, intense situation whenever those guys get together. These guys are unarmed. But, you know, you'll see whenever that happens, libertarians, right-wingers, conservatives across the board going, you know, this is what America's about. I might not like the Black Panthers, but they have rights just like you and I, and this is what makes America beautiful, actually. And it's just like 200 black guys with guns just being like, we're here to kill you. And they're like, wow, beautiful. Just like Thomas Jefferson intended. And then a bunch of white guys take the subway to hold a protest march, and it's, we have to stop them. These are all feds, you know. The SPLC added again. Why do you think that? But why do you think that, though? But what evidence has ever led you to think that the Patriot guys are anything other than what they say and appear to be, which is patriotic Americans with extreme discipline holding a protest? I mean, what's the big deal? The big deal is it makes black people scared. I guess some black people, criminals, I guess insane homeless criminals are mad. They can't defecate on the subway when a bunch of white dudes are there. Defining image of America, picture of black woman surrounded by white supremacists goes viral. An instant Pulitzer Prize winning photograph, actor Wendell Pierce said on X. Yeah, I guess. Yeah, it represents what a boogeyman, what a fake boogeyman white supremacy is. That this literally insane homeless black woman isn't even mistreated by them. Not even, no unkind word. Not exactly the thing you wanted it. Literally nobody got stabbed or shot. Literally nothing happened. Another picture, black man rides the D.C. Metro as white nationalist prepared to march on Washington, D.C. This is America's 250th Getty Images. And it's like, okay, and what? So a bunch of white guys rode the subway and you're mad. Okay. Chilling photo shows black woman on D.C. train surrounded by white supremacist thugs. Okay, yeah, and she couldn't poop on the floor. Sorry, a bunch of white dudes were there to enforce the law, so you couldn't freak out and poop on the floor and stab, innocent people. Sorry, you gotta behave yourself for a little while until you no longer feel the danger. And this is kind of the thing, it's like, when you've got a bunch of homeless people freaking out and causing problems on the subway system, what do you do? What do you do? On one hand, you could try to build, like, I don't know, glass barriers to make sure people pay their fare. Only then the homeless people throw their bodies through it rather than pay the $2.75 fare to allow them access to the train. Do you put security cameras? Do you put, you know, massive surveillance absolutely everywhere? You could. That might be helpful in, you know, cleaning up the blood afterwards, because you remember Irina Zarutska was murdered on a train that had video surveillance. That's why we have the video. You would think that video surveillance proving incontrovertibly that the man in a deliberate and targeted fashion slit the neck of a girl on purpose because she was white. You would think that at the very least would go towards punishing him for the crime, but that didn't happen, did it? He was declared insane for some reason, because I guess he's just that low IQ, and again, this is just a big problem that we have with our entire system, but obviously the security cameras didn't prevent the crime, and they didn't even go towards helping to solve the crime at all. And of course, that guy, like any of these people, have a rap sheet 20 miles long. So it doesn't seem like surveillance or, you know, more technological barriers to access, like none of that actually works. It is the fear of immediate intervention from good people. That's the only thing that stops bad people. The only thing that stops bad people is, and really it's not even like the fear of punishment later, because a lot of times, I mean, you know, this is the classic thing where it's like, what do you think is going to happen if you run from the cops? You think there's going to be like, dang, that guy's fast. He gets to leave now. We're done here. He ran away. And that's that. Like, no, they're going to chase you. You're going to be charged even more. Like, the thought process of like, if I do this now, in the future, I'll be punished. That doesn't always get through to the insane, rabid, low IQ criminals that we constantly have to deal with on an everyday basis. But the fear of immediate intervention from a big, tall white dude in a mask with a bat right in front of you, it turns out the insanity disappears. Turns out somehow through the fog of schizophrenia that is dictating their entire lives, that somehow the vision of a Viking standing there looking at you, it all dissolves and disintegrates. And the person that was ranting and raving and tearing her clothes off and fighting people is suddenly sitting very nicely and quietly and politely all the way to the train stop. Then she gets off at her designed stop and says, good day, gentlemen, and continues on her way. It turns out you can solve these problems. So I've got no problem with Patriot Front. I think what they do is probably a very valuable service for a lot of otherwise hopeless feeling young white dudes who see their country being stolen from them and want to belong to something that in some tangible, real way is fighting back against it. And their ranks are growing. In fact, I know we played one of these videos. We can play another one of just the sheer scale of the march. It was something like 400 people, and it's just absolutely massive. The march that occurred in Washington D.C. Over this week. I'll find the clip here because I want to go to this clip of clip 52. We want to roll 52 as B-roll. This is just an idea of how absolutely massive this march was on July 4th. Let's go ahead and roll that. So you can see just the huge number of people. None of them caused problems. And like, dude, when you have that many people, I mean, that is a, roll it again. Loop this for a second. Do you see how many people this is? Do you see how many like 6 foot tall buff dudes fit ready for action this is? I mean, if they wanted, how do you think the U.S. government would stop them from like taking over the Capitol if they wanted? Especially if they brought weapons, which obviously they didn't, but like, this is a very powerful force. And the fact that they behave in such a controlled, disciplined, nonviolent way. I like these guys. I don't know what else to say. I like these guys. Let's go to clip number 6 here. Powerful speech by Thomas Rousseau given. I believe this is from this July 4th march. Let's watch.
While many are content to celebrate independence on this day, we know what these vapid displays conceal. Our people are not independent. Our destiny is shackled to 100 competing nations imported to this soil, bringing with them countless incompatible interests. Our homeland has been turned into a squalid arena of profiteers and invaders, overseen by a spineless caste of traitorous politicians. We wish for sovereignty and liberty which cannot coexist with the conditions that have been forced upon us. A quarter millennia has now passed since America's violent birth, and nothing I can say will glorify independence more than the blood of our forebears that stains this continent, consecrating it forever with the immortal legacy of the men who died for so noble an objective as sovereignty. So we stand on the turning of an age and the making or breaking of our nation's destiny, and we must ask ourselves under the watchful gaze of history what is to be done. So dire is our circumstance, so extreme is our condition of peril, that the only way to secure our existence is to become all that we aspire to be. A defeated people was cast into this pit of a century, yet a nation exalted above all the rest will climb out of it. This is our task. Our national independence was seized by a natural aristocracy of our people, by the best of our Anglo-Saxon blood, waging war against tyranny to restore their ancient rights, not solely for themselves, but to bequeath it to their people and their posterity beyond that. Now, regime after regime, tainted with corruption, has wrestled this sovereignty away piece by piece and placed it in the hands of the few and the foreign. Our liberty as Americans is squandered upon the unassimilable masses. They know not how to use it, and we are done trying to teach them. Well, the state has spent priceless years and countless fortunes attempting to educate and civilize our ethnic replacements. True Americans have been not merely left behind, but subjected to endless abuse, unbefitting the heirs of this continent. The men of our nation, their hearts and minds and virtues are the safest place within which to secure the ultimate power of government. Yet neither do our people hold this power, nor are they yet capable of wielding it justly. If we want our country back, we cannot merely speak of policy. We cannot just propose change. We must first impose it upon ourselves. You may read our policy on the calluses of our hands, the scars on our backs, and the sweat of our brow. The future belongs to the men with iron in their blood and patriotism in their heart. We may not look to America's military might, its material wealth, or its depth of natural resources for our shield against subjugation. All this and more has been turned against us, fueling the flames of corruption and disunity. No, it is in our people that we must look. That fealty for liberty that rests only within the blood and spirit of the race which created America and sustains it still. In this and none other lies our salvation. I could list the enemies of our people. From the Jewish cabals to the Mexican cartels, from the African criminals to the homosexual peddlers of vice and exploitation. But I would not desanctify this day further with their description. Their conduct is set, their fates are written. This day is for Americans. It is on our shoulders that the fate of the nation rests. It is our deeds which will bring justice and prosperity. It is our identity which must be reclaimed. We are American, not by edict or ideal, but by blood. Our nation is our creed. Tyranny is so entrenched, corruption is so widespread that we harbor no thought that we will save this nation without America's enemies offering us chance after chance to prove our conviction with deed and action. Wisely, we do not wish for ease in our conquests, and bravely, we do not ask for it. A lesser task would have fallen to lesser men. We wish for nothing less and nothing short than a revolution, a time of vast change, and an outlook of undaunted courage towards the future. The vice that has infested our land will be expunged. The foreigners which have invaded our land will be expelled. And the Americans who have so long suffered the fate of a defeated people will be saved. We endeavor ceaselessly to reforge the lives of men, to steel them to their purpose, and awaken within them the strength to do what this era demands of them. On this day, once more, louder than ever, we declare our resistance as a promise to our people and a challenge to our foes. We renew our pledge upon the altar of this sacred day of eternal hostility against all that which threatens the existence of our people.
So that's Thomas Rousseau, the leader of Patriot Front. For anyone confused about what Patriot Front is and their stance on issues we face today, here's Thomas's speech from yesterday. I got chills. Hail Columbia. That's video. Can't say it's hard to disagree. We'll be right back.
Have you noticed all the big universities and corporate media and governments around the world run down America all day? That's because the American system stands against their globalist system. And as the public figures that out, their corrupt, tyrannical, oppressive, communistic, anti-human death cult can't compete with what America stands for. And we stand in the shoes, on the shoulders of our forebears. Whether you're black, white, Hispanic, old, young, if you love liberty and freedom, and if you want to be free, and if you want to control your own destiny, you believe in meritocracy, then America is for you. It's under attack because the idea of it stands in the way of the enemy. And America is a dream. Just like a dream to get married, or a dream to start a business, or a dream to write a poem or write a song. And when you do that, those dreams come true. But we have to breathe life into those dreams. They want to kill those dreams. Don't let them break your will. Be proud to be an American and know people around the world still love America and understand it's the globalists that have hijacked us, and we're in the process of taking our country back from the Chi-Coms and the Israel lobby and the globalists at Hollywood and the left and all of them. And that's why it's so important to support the next leg in the info war at alexjoneslive.com. And, of course, at the alexjonesstore.com with the widest selection of Patriot apparel, the best supplements, collectible knives, the best water filtration, and more that will empower and enrich your life while keeping this beacon of truth on the air as we accelerate into the future and as the Great Awakening prepares the final defeats of the globalists and their Great Reset. I salute you all. This is 1776 2.0. We're unstoppable together. God bless you all.
You do not help fund the resistance. You sit comfortably. You consume. You watch. You wait for others to fight the battle for you. The dark side has you firmly in its grasp. Every day, you remain on the sidelines. My power grows stronger. Continue believing. Someone else will save the galaxy.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
それでは最後のニュースです。トランプ大統領が国民に向けて演説します。
250年、アメリカは地球上で最も古い公国だ。我々は地球上で最も自由な国民だ。そして我々は地球上で最も強く、最も力ある国だ。
て神の恵みのもと、アメリカ合衆国は人類の歴史上最も成功し、最も偉大な功績を成し、最も統一した国家である。250年もの長きにわたり、自由、正義、平等、自治、そして比類なき繁栄がかつて世界のどこでも見られなかったほどにこの地で花開いてきたのだ。忘れてはならない。この国で我々が築き上げたものは決してこの世界の自然な姿ではないということ。
それは杞憂なものだ。かけがえのないものだ。そして真の奇跡的なものなんだ。
アメリカ独立の勝利は歴史上最もなり外れた人々によってもたらされたのだ。彼らこそが自由を宣言し、自由を勝ち取り、自由を守り抜き、そして自由を確固たるものにした者たちだ。
こういう男たちはアメリカでしか生まれ得なかった。この英雄たちこそアメリカ人の魂に宿る、時を超え朽てることなく永遠であり続ける者の体現なのだ。
彼らは行動の人であり、野心の人であり、大胆の人であり、運命の人であり、そして真に特殊した知性の持ち主だった。何よりも彼らは歴史に名を刻む偉大な男たちだったのだ。
そして結局のところ、常にその気質こそが我々の他に類を見ない唯一無二のアイデンティティなのだ。
Masterpiece by PSYOP Anime. PSYOP Anime showing a true appreciation for American culture. PSYOP Anime on X at PSYOP Anime. Who says America has no culture? And actually was posted along with a much longer version. We can go out with it here. Let's go to clip number 45. More by PSYOP Anime. Who says America has no culture? We have the best culture, actually. Let's roll it.
情報の流れはかつてない速度で加速している。世界は我々が考えるよりも早く変化している。では聞こう。あなたはどこからニュースを得ている？
サイオップアニメニュースネットワーク。
こんばんは、ニューヨークからお伝えします、ジンクス・リーです。早速今夜のトップニュースを見ていきましょう。ニューヨーク市長ゾーラン・マムダニ氏はその政治的影響力をさらに拡大し続けていることを示しています。さらにカマラ・ハリス氏が2028年に向けた連携を模索するため同氏に接触したとの報道もあります。それではマムダニ市長による独立記念日の国民向け演説を生中継でお伝えします。
おはよう同胞たちよ。明日我が国は独立宣言から250年の節目を迎える。そして今このアメリカを見て我々は何を思うだろうか。我々が見るのは矛盾に満ちる国の中の矛盾に満ちる都市だ。史上最も豊かな国だが、子供たちが休福のまま眠りにつく一方で世界初の熟満長者はさらなる富に飢えている。我々が見るのは工場の現場で汗を流す者たちが築き上げた計り知れない富を持つ国だ。だがその富の多くをほんの一握りの者たちの手に委ねてしまった国でもある。
Incredible stuff. Patriot, or, PSYOP Anime. PSYOP Anime.
Anybody telling you not to be proud of your American heritage is insane. Or they're a globalist technocrat trying to gaslight you into not loving your country and your heritage because they don't want you to stand up for it, because the American ideals of the revolution and what we've done together
has changed the world, and tyrants and systems of political oppression worldwide can't compete against the American system. That's why for the 250th anniversary of our republic, this July 4th, for just 3 days, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, we're having the biggest sale in the history of the AlexJonesStore.com. Up to 60% off on the supplements. All the best sellers are buy one, get one free. Methylene Blue, Bovine Colostrum, Shilajit, you name it. And the Patriot Apparel, the widest selection, some of the best designs, up to 50% off. TheAlexJonesStore.com. The tip of the spear. It funds our operation as we fight the globalists, and the products are amazing. So celebrate the 4th with me right now at TheAlexJonesStore.com, and I thank you for your support.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the War Room. I'm War Room. I'm Harrison Smith. Sorry, who am I? I'm Harrison Smith. This is War Room Live. You're watching us on the Alex Jones Network, alexjoneslive.com. However you're watching us, make sure to like, comment, subscribe, whatever you can do to help us out in the algorithm. We greatly appreciate it. I'm going to try to draw a through line between like all of these topics that we're covering today. And it's not difficult, I don't think. For example, you have stuff like this. Biden's illegal immigrant surge triggered 30% rise in home prices, 20% rise in rents, Fed paper finds. A new Federal Reserve working paper found the record surge in illegal immigration during the Biden administration triggered higher home prices and rents. The findings arrive as immigration remains a polarizing political issue. Republicans argue former President Joe Biden's border policy strained housing and public resources, while Democrats say immigration helped ease labor shortage and supported economic growth. Now, these are presented as if they are equal and opposite interpretations of the same phenomenon. They are not. They're not. One of these is accurate and one of them is not. One of them has the data to back it up and the other is based on feelings. Okay? House prices skyrocketed, causing the housing crisis that we're currently dealing with as a direct result of the tens of millions of people Joe Biden led into this country. This is in no way a benefit to economics for anybody except for the biggest stock owners and the owners of major corporations. They get to, you know, hire foreign illegal scab workers to undercut American wages. That's the only people this benefits. That and the boomers who own all the houses and have most of their wealth tied up in their houses. They got a 30% bump to their net worth as a consequence of these, of the illegal immigration. This is a major problem. The way it was, I saw somebody on X put it over the weekend that, you know, this population with the most expensive housing ever are going to have to start trying to sell those houses to the generation with the least buying power ever. It's a recipe for disaster. Obviously, the illegal aliens massively increased house prices, which is a big problem if you're concerned about the ability of the average American to start a family, build wealth, and create something intergenerationally. If, however, you are a selfish boomer who just wants to spend all of your money and then die and have the most amount of money possible when you die, then the house prices going up is a very good thing. So here we have a conflict of interest between the boomer core of the Republican Party and every generation after them. They don't want house prices to go down because that is a direct cut to their wealth. But if house prices don't go down, young people are never going to be able to afford them. BlackRock will come in, rent out the houses for the same amount a mortgage would have been, but never actually allow the average American family to build wealth to any sizable degree. It'll constantly be this paradigm of the company store where you're paying a percentage of your a vast percentage, like a 90% of your income just to maintain your basic necessities. Google searches for can't sell house at all-time high. Experts warn of housing crash worse than 2008. Do this now. Of course, you can manage this decline. China actually did exactly that over the last 20 years or so. But the boomers don't want that to happen. There's no political will to that. And, you know, this ties directly in with the problem of socialism and communism, of course, because like we, you know, keep laying out, the economic situation for the average American, young American, is abysmal right now. But that reality is concealed behind the facade of the stock market, which constantly goes up, which keeps going up. And, you know, I get it. I actually got my sister bullied me into making a retirement fund. And like, I immediately understood. It's like, okay, you put money in here and just every day you're getting a message basically saying either, hey, you got more money than you had yesterday. You're getting this little dopamine hit of like, all right, I'm making money. I'm not even doing anything. But if it goes down, it feels like you're getting an alert of like, hey, somebody just broke into your house and stole some of your stuff. Some of your stuff is gone now and it's never coming back. And so you're like in a Pavlovian way. It's like you're being trained to, what just happened? This TV just turned off. Are we still on the air? I was crazy. It was like a power shutdown or something. But basically in a Pavlovian fashion, boomers, especially anybody with money in the stock market, has been trained to see the stock market raising as a direct benefit to them and the stock market going down as a direct injury to them. And so they're happy the stock market's going up. They get wealthier as the stock market goes up. The only thing is that the stock market is utterly disunited with the actual fundamental reality on the ground of economic well-being of the average person. So this is a problem. This is a generational problem, primarily with the boomer generation being unwilling to pass anything on to their children. Obviously, this is a increasingly prevalent phenomenon, stories being written about celebrities going, I'm not leaving anything to my children. They can work for what they have like I did. And it's like, since when is this a virtue? This is just stealing from your children. Like, your children should inherit that. They should be able to build on that. They should benefit from all the success that you've had. For some reason, you want to, what, give it to the government so they can sell it to a bunch of, like, give away your life's work to a bunch of people who despise you? What is virtuous about that? What could possibly be virtuous about that? And the thing is, by hoarding wealth and power like this, it's setting up a paradigm to where it's just utterly unfair. And we've talked about this before, but I think I need to lay it out again. And this was sort of touched on in this post. But again, like, all these things are connected, right? Young people are going over to socialism and communism because older people who had incredibly easy access to vast amounts of wealth. And it's just true. There's no denying it. I mean, boomers can kind of undersell what their life was like to sort of, you know, personally feel good about it as a way to fulfill their own requirements of ego. But at the end of the day, it is literally not possible to do now what the boomers did in terms of getting a job right out of college, saving up for a summer and buying a house. I mean, that's just not possible now. And I know I'm downplaying how easy it was, or like I'm playing up how easy it was for boomers, but it's actually not that far from reality. And it is literally impossible for the average person or even the extraordinary person to achieve that same level of wealth nowadays without, you know, generational help, which luckily still some people do. But the point is, like, imagine this, like any other, you know, family where for all of time, power has been passed from father to son, from one generation to the next in a charitable, willing sort of way, right? It's insane to think that we would give up on this system of intergenerational wealth in favor of what? Well, in reality, if you get rid of the human behavior that's been developed over 2,000 years of tradition, the way that we pass property off from father to son, if you get rid of that, all you're doing is forcing the children to fight with their parents, to try to now steal from their parents because they know they're not going to receive it. In other words, we're all sitting here, and honestly, the people I feel worse for is like Generation X, who people just don't even think about. They just get passed over. They never got the chance to take the reins. And again, people will act like this is some sort of, I don't know, this is being, you know, it's worse than, or it's not as bad as we're making it. And, you know, it's always been this way and people just pulled themselves up on the bootstrap. But like, I can think of many, many examples of people who embody the real spirit of America, spirit of the West. People like Ron Paul. Ron Paul still, to this day, and for the last like 5 years, has been in a better physical condition than Mitch McConnell. Mitch McConnell, at this point, is totally brain dead. The latest reports are that there's absolutely no coming back. He is brain dead. He's had like 3 different strokes. Now, there's some shenanigans going on here, because if they say that he's dead before a certain time period, then to replace him, it's an open race, and Thomas Massey could actually feasibly become senator of Kentucky. So they're trying to drag it out and not admit that Mitch McConnell is dead until past the deadline. Then they can, you know, have a special election and sort of choose who they want to put in there. So there's some, you know, we can get into that more later. But just, you know, overall, like looking at this in a bird's eye view, these are the two comparisons of, you know, the boomer mindset. You've got the Mitch McConnell mindset, which is, I've accrued all this power, I'm going to wield it to my last. The Dianne Feinstein type, right? Where literally they're being wheeled out, like don't even know where they are, and like an assistant is putting their hand on the vote button. And it's just a ridiculous charade. And then there's the Ron Paul version, which is where once you're at retirement age, even if you're still capable, even if you're still functional physically, you retire and you pass it off. And of course, in the case of Ron Paul, you've got his son picking up where he left off, passing it on to the next generation. I'm going to go retire. I'm going to go have fun with my grandkids. You take over now, son. You're in charge. You've been trained well by me. You know, have fun with it. Carry on. That's the way America is supposed to work. It's the Mitch McConnell types that have destroyed us, that have, you know, clinged on to power, refusing to allow it to go anywhere, refusing to allow it to pass it off to your children or your inheritors in a peaceful way. So that all that means is that your inheritance, which should be passed off peaceably to your children, will instead be stolen by striving foreigners. Do you understand what I mean? Like, if you think about this in a, you know, family business operation, it's like your great-grandfather started a business. He passed it down to your grandfather. Your grandfather passed it down to your father. You've worked in the store your whole life expecting to, you know, receive the next link in the chain. And you look forward to passing it on to your kid when he's old enough. And suddenly your dad is like, well, there's this Indian kid that's super smart. And he's like really good at like inventory and stuff. So actually now you have to compete with him for it. And it's like, but it's just unfair. It's just like, well, what the hell? Why do I have to fight for something against this like random force? This should be my inheritance. The way this is supposed to work is you're supposed to pass it on to me. I shouldn't have to compete for it. Why do I have to compete for it? Why do I have to? And, you know, to a certain extent, you don't want to just pass off, you know, if you have a kid that's a total scumbag idiot, it's just going to destroy your business. Okay, that's a little bit different, but that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about a generation of people that are ready, willing, eager, like waiting, like, all right, when's it going to be our turn? We're here. We're ready. We've watched you. We respect you. We're going to carry on your tradition, and you just need to pass the baton to us. But the baton never gets passed. They're clinging on to the baton. They're holding on to the baton with dear life. So now the situation is, we can either go up to our parents and rip the baton out of their hands, which like we would never do. Like it doesn't work with our mindset. It's not how we were raised. It's not supposed to be like this. But you get, you know, some striver who, by the way, in this metaphor, the shop owner refusing to pass on ownership to his son, is passing it on instead to like some Indian dude who, by the way, cheated on his exams, you know, got a diploma from some diploma mill in India, didn't actually ever achieve anything. All the returns that he's showing are fudged a little bit. It's all actually kind of fraudulent, but, you know, it looks like he's able to make a little bit more money than you, son. So I guess the store is going to go to him instead, unless you can prove yourself worthy. It's like, so now we're having to compete against these people who, by the way, have artificial benefits. I'm telling you, not in the metaphorical sense, but in the very real sense, like you are being outcompeted by people who are competing unfairly. You know, an American trying to start a gas station isn't getting the free loans, isn't getting the, you know, interest-free benefits that the average immigrant is. So those immigrants, you know, money that an American would have to put towards refurbishing the business or buying inventory, all that sort of stuff. That money's given to them for free by the government. So then they can take all of that excess wealth that they gather and they can either improve their own lives or pass it on to their children or bring in their family members and give them jobs. And then they can give that excess money to political organizations that advocate for more benefits for them and more people from their home country coming into our country. So it creates a feedback loop of benefits that they can constantly keep re-upping how much they're benefiting from the system while the people that should be benefiting from the system are being left off to the side. By the way, guys, I need this TV on because I don't have a clock right now. So I'm just going to keep going until I hear the commercial music. Local historian at LMF Historian says, the generational handoff is happening in state-level politics right now. Boomer politicians are old. The party mechanisms are breaking down as they lose the energy and ability to supervise the apparatus they've built. This has created an opening for exactly two types of newcomers, Gen X slash Y diet boomer legacies that spin themselves as inheritors of parties and systems. They're incompetent and lack actual skills because they've never been allowed to do anything before. They don't actually even enjoy being in office. Things collapse around them. Examples for this would be people like Jeb, Vivek, and Kamala. Directionless Facebook warriors is the other group. Directional Facebook warriors that are unable to forgive a grudge or speak coherently, but have inexhaustible energy for dynamic, provocative behavior, emotionally incompetent, wholly unable to fundraise or campaign. Example, VA Attorney General Jay Jones, Beto O'Rourke, George Santos. Boomers will all be gone within two election cycles. These archetypes will be hitting the Senate soon. Boomers catch a lot of flack, but they did run a stable, functional system. Rather than pass it down, they're going to destroy it, and these people, and it will be these people that do it. So again, I agree with what he's saying, but to me, it's more about this conflict between the Rand Pauls out there that just are like plugging along, doing their thing and are following in their father's footsteps. And like, that's how it should work. That's how it should actually operate. Not that Rand Paul was gifted a Senate seat, right? He had to earn it. He had to, you know, fight for it as well. But on a civilizational level and a societal level, the wealth, the power, the influence, it's the Mitch McConnell types that dominate. They cling on to it forever. They will not pass it on to their children, which means their children might not ever actually get it. It's going to be the strivers, the thieves, the you know, interlocutors that show up to rip it out of Mitch McConnell's hand and say, this is ours now, actually. We earned it because you people were, you know, incapable of keeping it for yourselves. And, you know, basically the crown is in the gutter. Somebody has to pick it up. When in reality, they should be, the boomers should, if they cared at all about their progeny, their legacy, their even their well-being into old age, they would have facilitated the, you know, building up of the younger generations, but they haven't. They refuse. They just can't. I don't know what it is, but I'm also not all that interested in, you know, trying to empathize with them. I think they just need to be replaced. So either we've got to go to war with our parents. We've got to go to war with the boomers to force them to give up the power that they've accrued for themselves and jealously hold to themselves. Or it's going to be, you know, the AOC types, the Mandami types, the Striver types who show up and rip it out of their hands. And we're sitting here like, well, you could have passed it off to us and we could have guarded it. We could have safeguarded it. We could have maintained it. But you didn't do that. You didn't pass it on to us. You tried to hold on to it until you died. And it turns out the person that killed you got to get it. Turns out the person that showed up at the very last second got to rip it out of your hands on your deathbed. And you're sitting here like, wait, no, I didn't want that to go to you. You're a crazy socialist that hates me. And it's like, well, too bad, old man. You're weak. I'm strong. I get to keep it. Meanwhile, the children of the boomers have just been completely excluded. Because we never wanted to have to fight you for our inheritance. We didn't think that was a thing we had to do. We were not prepared to do that. Like these other people, they're coming from other countries. Like they are here ready to fight for something that we shouldn't have to fight for and never had to fight for before. But now we have to fight for it. But we're untrained in that fighting. We're not ready for that. We're perfectly capable of managing the system that we're supposed to inherit, but if we don't inherit it, what are we supposed to do? So again, you've got these strivers, these very motivated people who will seize power but have no interest in maintaining the system as it exists now, or even the ability to maintain it if they wanted to, but they don't even want to. So the system is going to be destroyed because, as a direct consequence of the boomers' selfishness and unwillingness to pass on power to the next generation. So Mitch McConnell is like the best example of this. And there's still, even after his total incapacity, where according to all the reports I'm seeing, he is literally brain dead. He's just not technically dead yet. I guess his heart is still being kept pumping by machines because they are still desperate to retain that power and keep that power to themselves, whoever the cabal is now operating around Mitch McConnell. What should happen is you should go, hey, look, Mitch McConnell had a great run. He's dead now. Let's open it up to the wider public. You know, let the best man win. That's Thomas Massie. Great. That's Thomas Massie. He gets to be a senator now. But that's how our system's set up. That's how it should work. But like, they can't do it. They're desperately, jealously clinging on to this power for all they've got, which just means it's going to be taken from you. Just means it's going to be stolen by people that aren't you and don't like you and don't have your best interests in mind and have no interest whatsoever in maintaining the system that you built and put your whole life into. Okay, Mitch, okay, you retarded turtle, literally selling out our birthright for nothing, for absolutely nothing. You're still going to die a despised, powerless skeleton, meat skeleton being propped up by machines controlled by your Chinese wife. Like, what a despicable, pathetic, desperate way to go. You could have just retired and passed on, you know, all of your very skillfully accrued power to, you know, a good inheritor, a good heir. But no, you wanted to keep it all to yourself. So now it's going to be stolen by some radical Muslim communist who's going to use it to destroy everything that you built, turn it all into ash. So this is the curse of the boomers that we now find ourselves in, and that we have to try to figure out a way to deal with, because I hold absolutely no expectation that we can change the mind of the boomers, that there's any reversing this anytime soon, especially not with people like Caroline Leavitt just showing a total disregard for the actual concerns of Gen Z, which all really boil down to the fact that the actual people who are supposed to inherit the American empire, instead, we didn't realize this whole time we were supposed to be competing with a giant generation worldwide strivers insinuating themselves into the good graces of our parents and our grandparents. And yeah, I'm not talking about my parents. My parents get it. My parents are cool. They're boomers, but they actually understand and aren't, you know, holding onto their wealth, you know, till the end. Trump says, I don't think about Americans' financial situation in Iran negotiations. So, again, you don't want Ma'am Donnie taken over? Then maybe you should have built up the next generation of political leadership. You don't want communists destroying America from the inside out? Then maybe you should have done something to prevent that this entire time. But instead, you've spent your whole life since the 60s trying to tear down your tradition. Show how cool you are.
We're extending America's 250th mega sale, the biggest in the history of the AllShowStore.com. That means this Monday the 6th and Tuesday the 7th at midnight central, the biggest sales ever. Buy one, get one free. Up to 60% off the best-selling supplements, Patriot apparel, 50% off, and more. Take action now at the AllShowStore.com. No republic, no empire, no nation has ever survived more than 250 years. But America has to survive. The idea of America, private property, the right to lead your own life, to follow your own religion or not, so many things that this country enshrined that no other nation had became the model of the world. That's why the left, why BlackRock, why the globalists, why the WEF, why the UN openly want to discredit it. The elites don't like the idea of America because it allows the little people to have meritocracy and develop their own wealth and their own independence. The globalists want neo-feudalism. They want serfdom. They want a great reset to control us. So they've been trying to undermine this country, demonize this country, and blame all the problems in the world on the freedom of America and the West and Christianity and white people.
but it's not working. The world is awakening to the Great Reset, and we are in the Great Awakening. That's why it's so important on our 250th anniversary that we remember what made America great and that we continue those values on in the face of tyranny. Because the ideas we're promoting work and are pro-human, are dynamic, and unleash the incredible competition of the human spirit and meritocracy. If we don't stand up for not just 1776 here in the U.S., but worldwide, then we allow the globalists, the megabanks, with their transhumanist, death cult, depopulation agenda to come in and sell their lie of collectivism, universal basic incomes, cashless society, control grids, the social credit scores, and the entire system of dehumanization that they're establishing. We are literally facing freedom or slavery. It's a choice we must take. So to celebrate this 250th anniversary, we have the biggest sale in the history of the AlexJonesStore.com. 50% off on all of the incredible Patriot apparel. The widest selection, some of the best designs in the world. What an adventure to wear this apparel and meet like-minded people and spread the word. And then most importantly, the very best game-changing five-star supplements on the planet. Up to 60% off. And all the best sellers are buy one, get one free. This Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, it's a flash sale. Ultramethylene Blue, the best on the market. Buy one, get one free. Bovine Colostrum, the best, highest rate on the market. Buy one, get one free. Shilajit Complex, that has all these natural peptides and boost your testosterone and more. Buy one, get one free. As I said, it was 60% off on all the other supplements. The lowest is 40, the highest is 60. These are insanely good. All you've got to do is try them. We have over a 90% reorder rate at thealexjonesstore.com. And anyone who's shopping on the site should be a VIP. Cancel anytime. It's $30 a month. Instantly when you're charged, $40 is put in your account to spend on the site. You make $10, special deals, special offers, and sales on top of the sales, making a bunch of stuff loss leaders if you're a VIP. So become a VIP, commit to the American Republic in the year 2026. Help keep the broadcast on the air so we can expand the Alex Jones Network. It's a win-win. So to celebrate America and to stand against the globalist death cult, please support your own future and my future, our collective future together, by individual action at thealexjonesstore.com. Happy birthday, America. I salute all of our founders, our veterans, and all the patriots out there. God bless you all. We're extending the biggest sale in the history of thealexjonesstore.com. Take action now.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
All right, welcome back, folks. This is War Room Live. I got a lot of stuff still to talk about. Stories at Alex Jones Live, alexjoneslive.com. Caroline Levitt claims her statement on Gen Z being lazy was taken out of context. White House Press Secretary Caroline Levitt, a 28-year-old Zoomer, went on Jesse Waters' primetime show on Thursday where she discussed how the new crop of Democrat politicians are communists. Following that topic, the Trump administration officials told Waters that Generation Z, to which she is a part, is lazy, born with silver spoons in their mouths, had become accustomed to getting everything handed to them, and should be drafted into the military and sent to Iran or Cuba. And this is what I mean. There is nothing, I guess it is entitled, but not in a negative way. You are entitled to your inheritance. That's what it means. It's why it's your inheritance. You are entitled to it. We are seeing our inheritance stolen, and we're mad about that. I'm not even Gen Z. I'm a millennial. I'm older than this gold digger, but, you know, she married a 60-year-old man who's like a billionaire, and, you know, she's doing fine. It's so insulting to call Generation Z lazy and entitled, just like the millennials were called, you know, lazy and entitled. And to a certain degree, you know, it's been a deliberate psychological operation. Like, I totally get now. I used to not understand it when people were like, oh, it's bad that we give out trophies to people who don't win. I was always kind of like, well, why? It's, you know, it's just fun. I was on a baseball team. I get a trophy. That's cool. I kind of get it to a certain degree that it's like, oh, we can't have anybody lose. Everybody has to be the best at everything. That mindset has, you know, destroyed a lot of people. But it's not unwarranted. And it's not like they just want to have, I mean, some people do just want to have everything handed to them. But for the vast majority of people, it's like, I went to school, I got good grades, I did everything I was supposed to do, and I have nothing at the end of it. I fulfilled my end of the bargain, you didn't. I did the stuff that for all of time in America with a system that is serving the people would lead to me having a comfortable and even, yes, like wealthy life. But that has been stolen from me. I can't get a starter job anymore. I can't get experience under my belt working at a fast food place because the fast food place is run by a bunch of adult foreigners. Okay, so, you know, you don't get the work experience early on. You also don't get hired on. I mean, the numbers that have come out about the job market, Americans have been deliberately excluded from the job market. The tune of like 90% of the jobs created went to non-Americans. Even amongst Americans, it went almost entirely to non-white, non-male populations. So you have this huge, tens of millions of young white guys in America who just have no chance, have no opportunity, can't prove themselves, can't get jobs and work their way up from the bottom. They can't even get the lower jobs, let alone, you know, help to pick up, you know, the vice president position right out of college. Like, you know, what's wrong with that? What would be wrong with, you know, Alex Jones passing on the Alex Jones Network to Rex Jones? Would that be some sort of crazy violation of our, you know, deep-held dedication to meritocracy? Like, no, it's actually the perfectly proper way to do things. That's actually how it should be. You shouldn't have to compete against anybody for your parents' affection or inheritance. It's not entitlement in a negative way. It is entitlement in a proper way. We are entitled to the benefit of the wealth and prosperity our forefathers built for us. It's being stolen from us by foreigners, by people that aren't us, and by their collaborators selling us out in the halls of power, like Caroline Leavitt and the people that she's defending in all of this. Why would we be okay with this? What is wrong about being entitled to your inheritance? That's the question I want to ask. What is wrong with being entitled to your inheritance? It's your inheritance. It is a poisonous leftist ideology, actually, to say, you know, you don't deserve your inheritance. You don't deserve a benefit from the fact that your parents, you know, built a great thriving society. You don't get to benefit from that. Like, does she think that, you know, there should be a huge death tax so there's no more inheritance? Should we all have to start out at zero? Should it be illegal for us to read to our kids because kids in the ghetto don't have parents to read to them? Like, what is wrong with benefiting from the success of previous generations? What is negative about that? It would be negative if, like, hey, we're giving you everything and you just reject it and go, oh, I would rather not work and I'd rather let it all go. Okay, fine. Then you give it off to somebody else. But for the vast majority of people, we just want to work. We just want to get a job. We just want to have a good life. We just want to have a little extra money to spend on ourselves at the end of the week. Is that entitlement? You're too entitled. You know, and again, this is where you get people going, how is it entitled to want to not have to go bankrupt if I break my leg? You know, if God forbid I come down with some disease, why should I, you know, fear losing my job and losing my health insurance? And so then you've got the left coming in and going, well, if the government provided medical care for you, then you wouldn't have to worry about any of this. You do deserve medical care. And it's like, if we can't tell the younger generations, you do deserve the bare minimum, you are an American, and by virtue of your birth, you will never go hungry. You will never, you know, have to dig a ditch. You don't have to do any of that. You are the inheritors of the greatest empire the world has ever seen. You just have to maintain it. What's wrong with that? Boomers actually do hold most of the wealth and power. Why do they call it whiny to point that out? Because they want to keep it. It's not that complicated. It's all just selfishness. So while Leave It said the word communist and communism, or commie, at least 10 times in the interview prior to her statement on Gen Z. She did not specify that only Gen Z communists are lazy, while her statement implied that all members of Gen Z are lazy. She now claims the statement was taken out of context. Waters, a 47-year-old Gen X host who speaks to boomer audiences with a median age of 69, said that Americans in their 20s are complaining that things are expensive. He then said, yes, things are expensive when you don't have a real job, failing to mention that immigrants, both legal and illegal, are soaking up many jobs which are normally held by people in their 20s. Right, Leavitt agreed. So I think that's a great sentence. This is a great article from Sean Miller on Alex Jones Live. Things are expensive when you don't have a real job, failing to mention that immigrants, both legal and illegal, are soaking up many jobs which are normally held by people in their 20s. Yeah, it's exactly right. Like I said, we don't have the starter jobs there for teenagers. You don't have an ability to work your way up from the ground floor, especially when every promotion and every, you know, managerial position is ordered by BlackRock to go to a black lesbian woman. And when you're not doing anything to prevent that, when you're not doing anything at all to help mitigate that problem, how are you complaining about the reaction to that problem? Again, if there weren't 50 million immigrants taking every single job, if there wasn't BlackRock deliberately disadvantaging American people, if there weren't all these problems, then we and people younger than me wouldn't have anything to complain about, and then you wouldn't be able to demonize them as lazy. But you cause all these problems, you do nothing to stop the exploitation, and then you expect people to accept that and be okay with that and sit by. I'm constantly amazed at the amount of activity and effort and energy the communists put in to their activity. I mean, you've seen some of our reporting and you see it every day. I mean, there's nothing lazy about them. They're insane. They're psychotic. They're dangerous and evil. If I don't doubt any of that. But also, what's the other option? What's the other option? All they're telling Gen Z is behave yourself, keep your head down, you know, work for people who despise you, and accept the fact that you'll never do as well as your parents. You'll never even do as well as the immigrants that got here yesterday. Yeah, Patrick Howley said, Caroline Leavitt thinks Gen Z needs to just pull themselves up by their bootstraps and marry a 60-year-old New Hampshire real estate developer resort landlord who you meet during your failed congressional run. Stop whining. Start dining. Yeah, just start dining, you guys. And for the Gen Z people out there that are seeing this and disgusted at, you know, the way you're being treated by people in government, the boomers and the zoomers in the government that are just calling you lazy, my advice would be develop a skill that people will pay you for. It's actually a great, great thing to do. Just understand that you are being deliberately excluded from the traditional paths to wealth. The traditional paths to power are being precluded. You are being precluded from accessing that. Let's see what Caroline Leavitt has to say. I'm seeing a lot of bad faith actors take my comments from this interview out of context, so here's the full interview. Let me expound. This interview was about the rise of communism on the left, and I was asked by Jesse Waters why so many young people are buying the false promise of free stuff being sold by communist politicians. My answer is a combination of laziness, yes, and the liberal indoctrination that has been taking place in our education system for far too long. There are far left educators pumping students' heads with garbage, convincing them that hard work and sacrifice won't pay off down the road because they want them totally reliant on the government instead. Hold on. Let me rebut that real quick. I mean, I guess I already did. I mean, I guess it is literally the same thing. Yes, the education system turning people into liberals is a major problem. Why won't you do anything about that? Like, this is the thing. They're complaining about stuff. They have the power to change, but they won't change. They had no problem altering the curriculum of academia when it served the Israelis. When it served the Jews, they were more than happy to use the power of the government to force changes in the curriculum, force changes in the behavior of the professors. I mean, there was no limits. You have to get rid of your president. We're putting a new president that serves our interests instead. That happened to benefit the Jews in Israel. It didn't happen to benefit the American people. So you can't complain about the liberal brainwashing in college when you are the one in charge and you refuse to do anything about the brainwashing into college. So that's the first thing. Is that if you really are concerned about this, then you would be doing something about it. You don't, so I don't believe you that you're actually concerned. In addition to that, kids don't need to be told that they will not be rewarded for hard work. We see it everywhere. The stats tell us that. The reality, our own experience tells us that. How many stories have you heard about young white guys? I mean, there's a story that was going viral the other day in response to somebody saying, you know, oh, you know, non-white people have to work that much harder for white people. We don't have the same, you know, opportunities. And of course, there's example upon example of people. Like this one guy who wrote poetry, couldn't get his poetry published anywhere ever, then decided to claim he was a Chinese woman. And suddenly he was like being nominated for Poet of the Year and being paid huge amounts of money for his poems. The poems hadn't changed. The person who they thought wrote them changed time and time again. And in your personal life, I'm sure you've seen, if you're a young man, examples where you have been explicitly discriminated against because they're not even shy about it. It's not even like this wink and a nod. Well, you know, you just don't, you know, you're just not quite the right fit. They'll literally be like, we're not hiring white people right now. Sorry. So they don't need academia to fill their heads with this stuff. It's true. It's true. Yeah. Straight white author's career finally takes off it when he tells woke publishers he's a genderqueer Nigerian. 16th of July, 2025. Yeah, this was last year and it came up again recently. But yeah, this happens over and over and over again, and white guys know it. So for Caroline Leavitt to sit there and go, these teachers are telling kids that they won't benefit from hard work. No, it's actually true. Our system is broken. You don't benefit from hard work. And the problem is this is, you know, down the line, it's destroying everything. We've covered, you know, instances of teachers writing posts saying, you know, my really talented kids in my class, just they don't do work because they realize it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. If you can spend 10 minutes putting together a, you know, the crappiest presentation you could possibly imagine and you get an A, why would you put any more effort? Or if a kid puts 4 hours into a project and gets the same grade as some other kid that barely tried at all, you're literally incentivizing people not to work hard. You're proving to them that working hard doesn't actually benefit you. It's not just something they're saying. It's something they're proving over and over again in reality. Working hard doesn't help because white guys are being deliberately excluded from the market. Why low U.S. math scores are concerning researchers and economists. Federal testing data released Wednesday showed that students are struggling, and experts said that means they may not be able to work in high-skilled jobs. Well, the other thing is that we've brought in tens of millions of foreigners that don't even speak English and can't read and are tanking the test scores across the board. If you isolate white American, you know, born American citizens, our test scores are up there with Finland or any other, you know, exemplar of academics. It's all being dragged to the bottom by this endless drive towards equity that Caroline Leavitt seems ignorant of, seems not to care about. If we can bring up her tweet, I'll keep going through it, but you know, laid out right there. She blames the teachers for convincing kids that hard work doesn't pay, but no, reality convinces them that hard work doesn't pay. She says, I went on to say that's why President Trump is a huge advocate for school choice and why so many parents I know are turning to homeschooling. Good parenting matters more than anything, but a solid civics-based education is also vitally important. Okay, so that, like, homeschooling is not a solution to this. That's running away. That's abandoning the fight. I don't want to have to take on the extra burden of teaching my kids or having to, you know, have a wife that doesn't work. So I'm paying all the bill. Like, this is not sustainable. This doesn't work on a massive level. I can do it because I have a wife that's dedicated and she wants to do it. And like, we're lucky enough to, but I recognize and I'm extremely privileged in that. And that if my wife had to work to pay the bills, homeschooling wouldn't even be an option for us. So you're offering a impossible solution to a lot of families. And even if it is possible, it's a huge burden. Why should we have to take on that burden? Why should we abandon the school system that you're in control of, that the federal government dictates, because you've allowed a bunch of leftist psychopaths to take it over and pervert it? This is not a solution. This is not the language of somebody who actually identifies the problem and is working to solve it. This is somebody who is there to tell you to surrender, to tell you that you've lost and to give up and to go, you know, go do your little homeschool thing, you know, while 99% of your children's, you know, cohort age group is all being indoctrinated into this. So maybe your kids will be the outliers. They'll be the ones actually intelligent. They'll be the ones actually be able to read. And you really are just setting them up for tragedy because they'll just be the ones who recognize how things are going, but will be incapable of stopping it because they've been deliberately excluded from institutional power. And by the way, they're going to make homeschooling illegal soon too. So that's not an option either. And they're not doing anything to, you know, build that up and pump that up. So back to Caroline Levin. So she says, just if you don't like your school, you know, battering your children's minds, crushing your children's spirit, then you just have to, you know, be able to afford to homeschool. I care enough about our country to tell uncomfortable truths. No, you don't. And it's undeniable fact that a growing number of people in our country are falling for the lies of socialism, communism. Yeah, because if they don't, then the only people they have to turn to are people like you who just call them lazy and tell them it's their fault and offer nothing. Sold to them by anti-American politicians who've never built anything, offer real solutions, or are intent on tearing down everything that makes this country great. Well, that's been torn down, and you refuse to do anything to help rebuild it. At the same time, it's also true, keep it up, that Gen Z Americans are hardworking, entrepreneurial, and deeply patriotic. It's vital we protect the American dream for them. That's why I'm honored to work with President Trump and speak on behalf of an administration that's implementing the right policies to do this. Lower taxes, less regulation, stopping Wall Street from purchasing single-family homes. They didn't do that. That was a lie. Trump accounts in the deportation of illegal aliens. They're not doing that either. That are taking our housing and jobs. There's more to do, which is why President Trump and our entire administration won't stop fighting to make life better and more affordable for young people. I'll say again that in 2016, when Trump came down the escalator, his primary thing was illegal immigration. It was build the wall. I think we all remember that. So in 2016, already the problem was such that it became the primary concern of the presidential race. The wall was never built. There was never any sizable amount of deportations whatsoever. And then in 2020, Joe Biden opened up the floodgates and we got tens of millions of immigrants over those 4 years. So as we've said before, at the current rate of deportations, we maybe, like all things being in a perfect scientific, you know, facsimile of it, like if you don't include all the people that are still coming over illegally, if you don't include all the children that the illegal immigrants had, if you just take the numbers as if they exist in a, you know, mathematically perfect form, then maybe we'd get back to 2020 levels by 2038. If we're deporting people at most one third of the rate that they were imported, then it's going to take three times longer to get them out than it took to get them in. Long story short, we're never getting them out at this rate. So even the things that she's saying, like, well, we're getting rid of illegal immigrants and we're doing this and we're doing that, they're not actually doing any of that stuff. It's not actually happening to any degree that will actually benefit the average person, for the most part, because the big corporations that rely on illegal immigration are the biggest funders of Trump. And that's why, you know, hospitality and farm workers are being excluded from the deportations. These are the places where we need deportations to happen, not only because they're, you know, just obviously able to get away with paying, you know, dirt poor wages that, you know, people are thrilled with, but also because we are now experiencing outbreaks of diseases that we'd gotten rid of or hadn't been subjected to for a long time because a bunch of illegal immigrants are picking our crops and they're pooping in the field. It's disgusting, but that's another, you know, big story from today. It's another negative consequence of illegal immigration that is not being dealt with by the Trump administration to any degree at all. So again, you know, if you actually cared about this stuff, then you would be approaching it with the seriousness it demands. The deportations would have started the day Trump got into office. They would have been like insane. I mean, we brought in like a million people a month. We need to be deporting a million people a month. And of course, that would be a huge economic generator. You'd be able to hire all these people. You'd be paying for their hotels as they go from city to city to stay. Like, there, it would be nothing but a benefit to do a massive, unrelenting, total and complete deportation effort. And that alone, even just the effort alone, would encourage self-deportations and would encourage, you know, foreigners to stay out. But it hasn't been done, and it's not going to be done. And it's basically over. And we didn't get the SAVE Act passed, so we don't even have secure elections. And that's, it's too late for that because the midterms are close enough now that even if it passes, the election is already pretty much happening in a lot of these states. And they'll say, well, we can't do it now. We'll maybe do it next time. But by next time, they'll, you know, have replaced all of the Republicans. They'll probably undo, you know, whatever would have been done from the SAVE Act. So it's over. So it's just, it's over. And there's the Republicans that failed. And it's Caroline Leavitt that failed. And it's Donald Trump that failed. Yeah, just pull yourself up by bootstraps. Here's a falling down shack for the low, low price of $719,000. 1,128 square feet. I don't know. None of this is complicated. It's all very simple. And we have to pretend like there's some, you know, spiritual malaise infecting Generation Z that, you know, is just inexplicable, except that they're being convinced by the lies of communists. No, they're being convinced because they have reason to be convinced, because they have reason to disbelieve your promises, because they keep getting screwed over by you over and over and over. Build my own house for about $150,000. Stop bitching, start working. Okay, boomer, here's an empty lot. Doesn't even look like it's in a good neighborhood for $415,000. And there's not even a house. He says, I paid less than that for 30 acres. Look harder. Yeah, just look harder. Just move to a small town. Just move to some, you know, small, crappy town. You understand. There's nothing about that that is attractive to an average Zoomer, or B, actually going to help fix things systematically. We actually don't need a bunch of like Zoomers that are plumbers, you know, living in their own home. We need Zoomers that are patriotic, that are going to the best law schools and going to Harvard and getting into office. But you just want everybody to become plumbers, so it's not going to work that way. It's never going to work.
We're extending America's 250th mega sale, the biggest in the history of the AllShowStore.com. That means this Monday the 6th and Tuesday the 7th at midnight central, the biggest sales ever. Buy one, get one free. Up to 60% off the best-selling supplements, Patriot apparel, 50% off, and more. Take action now at the AllShowStore.com.
Have you noticed all the big universities and corporate media and governments around the world run down America all day? That's because the American system stands against their globalist system. And as the public figures that out, their corrupt, tyrannical, oppressive, communistic, anti-human death cult can't compete with what America stands for. And we stand in the shoes, on the shoulders of our forebears. Whether you're black, white, Hispanic, old, young, if you love liberty and freedom, and if you want to be free, and if you want to control your own destiny, you believe in meritocracy, then America is for you. It's under attack because the idea of it stands in the way of the enemy. And America is a dream. Just like a dream to get married, or a dream to start a business, or a dream to write a poem or write a song. And when you do that, those dreams come true. But we have to breathe life into those dreams. They want to kill those dreams. Don't let them break your will. Be proud to be an American and know people around the world still love America and understand it's the globalists that have hijacked us, and we're in the process of taking our country back from the Chi-Coms and the Israel lobby and the globalists and Hollywood and the left and all of them. And that's why it's so important to support the next leg in the info war at AlexJonesLive.com. And, of course, at the AlexJonesStore.com. With the widest selection of Patriot apparel, the best supplements, collectible knives, the best water filtration, and more that will empower and enrich your life while keeping this beacon of truth on the air as we accelerate into the future and as the Great Awakening prepares the final defeats of the globalists and their Great Reset. I salute you all. This is 1776 2.0. We're unstoppable together. God bless you all. Take action now.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
AlexJonesLive.com is the new site to find the next step in the InfoWar. Articles, video reports, live streams, breaking news. It's all on AlexJonesLive.com. We need you to be the Paul Revere's and share the links. You can also find us on X at RealAlexJones and on Rumble at rumble.com/TheAlexJonesShowLive. And don't forget to download the app. Go to alexjonesapp.com. The fight continues. If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
AlexJonesLive.com. We've only just begun to fight.
Globalists are collapsing worldwide, but they're fighting back with tyranny, censorship, and more. And they have targeted my operation more than anybody else's. But that's okay. That means we're over the target. It means we're effective. And I couldn't have done any of this without you. All the success of my operation to the listeners, the viewers, your word of mouth, your support, and of course the great crew. And that's why I want to just thank you all as America approaches its 250th anniversary. We have to understand they're trying to demoralize us, trying to break our will. We can't let them do that. It's the globalists that are losing. We're actually winning. So, to celebrate America's 250th anniversary, we're launching the biggest sale in the history of the AlexJonesStore.com. Buy one, get one free, ultramethylene blue. Buy one, get one free, bovine colostrum. Buy one, get one free, Shilajit Complex. So incredible. And up to 60% off on all the other supplements, 50% off on all the Patriot apparel, limited issue, 250th anniversary, and more. So take action now at the AlexJonesStore.com and be the reason we stay on the air and celebrate our American Republic, the globalist hate.
You just gotta look harder, Zoomer. You just gotta look harder. You know, we'll finish here with this clip about Mitch McConnell, because this is the problem with boomers manifest. Clip number 37 here is a woman named Desiree Townsend. You can follow her on X at Cheering for Change. That's cheering, then the number four, change. She wrote, Senator Mitch McConnell has now been hospitalized for 3 weeks. The gravity of the situation cannot be overstated, especially given his wife, Eileen Chao, appeared in China just days after his hospitalization to meet with high-ranking Chinese officials. This is now a question about national security and about who gets to vie for his position in the Senate. And that is dependent on whether he is dead right now or whether they can keep his death concealed until the deadline passes. Here's Desiree Townsend. Let's watch.
Desiree Townsend here again outside of George Washington University Hospital as we mark week three of the hospitalization of Senator Mitch McConnell following the June 14th medical emergency. As you can see behind me, the Capitol Hill police vehicles, these black vehicles, are still parked outside the hospital here, an indication that he is likely also still here. So after I first released the dispatch audio indicating that he was found unconscious and was given CPR for cardiac arrest, this story finally gained national attention. However, I don't think many Americans fully appreciate the seriousness of what may be at stake following Senator McConnell's medical emergency 3 weeks ago, or how Congress's lack of a constitutional mechanism to remove members for incapacity could have broader implications for the nation's governance and, most importantly, national security. This incredibly odd story also involves Senate Majority Leader John Thune, who stated to Politico that he had spoken with McConnell the day after his hospitalization and that he, quote, sounded good, end quote. Now, this statement threw off the press for nearly 2 weeks, placating the public until I released the EMS dispatch audio showing the seriousness of this medical emergency. Now, given that Senator McConnell is still here in the hospital 3 weeks later, and as far as I know, he has not spoken with any other members of Congress, now puts this initial remark by Leader Thune into question. And look, he could have just been attempting to give Senator McConnell his privacy, but the better response could have been, I have not heard anything, or I don't know. And this story gets even odder after I reported a couple days ago of a press release documenting that McConnell's wife, Elaine Chao, met with the vice president of China 3 days after his hospitalization. And to be clear, the issue is not merely that Elaine Chao went to China. The issue is she is a private citizen. She holds no official government position. She's married to a sitting U.S. senator who reportedly had a major medical emergency, and now she's meeting with one of China's highest ranking official 3 days later, all while the American public and possibly senior U.S. government officials in the Trump administration, as well as members of Congress, lacked clear information about his condition. So let me be clear about this. A meeting with China's vice president is not casual. Even if this was pre-planned, it signals Beijing views her as someone politically meaningful. Yet she has no current role in the U.S. government. So why is she having these meaningful meetings with top government officials in China? Did she potentially carry messages to the CCP? Did she discuss U.S. policy? Or is she being treated as a back channel to non-public information, including her husband's health condition? Now, what I'm about to tell you next is incredibly important for all of you to understand. Like every sitting member of Congress, Senator McConnell has access to highly classified closed-door intelligence briefings on matters impacting U.S. national security. Those briefings can include topics such as military operations involving Iran, as well as classified discussions related to defense appropriations, an area of particular significance given that McConnell's role as a chair on the Senate Appropriations Committee. Now, if Senator McConnell potentially lacks the mental capacity and independent ability to perform his duties sitting as a U.S. senator, could classified information have been accessed, discussed, or even recorded by individuals hypothetically operating his office behind the scenes? More broadly, what safeguards exist to protect classified information when a member of Congress is no longer capable of independently carrying out the office responsibilities? Lastly, what information, if any, did Elaine Chao carry with her to meet with the vice president of the People's Republic of China, Han Zhang, on June 17, 2026, 3 days after her husband, Mitch McConnell, reportedly went into cardiac arrest?
McConnell's daughter deactivates X account as health questions swirl. That's alleged from Daily Beast. Very little information has been given about Mitch McConnell's health. The thing is, like, everything that we know so far is enough to say he should no longer hold the office, right? I mean, when we can't determine whether he's alive or dead, I think it's pretty safe to say he's not the one fulfilling his obligations as senator. And so it's kind of like if he was a decent, respectable person, he would willingly bow out and say, I'm too old, I'm too enfeebled to do this, it's time for me to retire. But he refuses to do that. His family refuses to do that. This should have happened years ago. For the last couple of years, every time we've reported on Mitch McConnell, it's been because he's had some sort of stroke or just like stops talking in the middle of a sentence while he's doing a press conference. It's been embarrassing for the last several years. And it's, you know, the type of thing where it's like, okay, if his health isn't enough to discredit him and, you know, debar him from, you know, filling his function, the fact that he refuses to acknowledge that is in and of itself evidence that he is incapable or not fit to hold the office. When you're clinging on to office, despite the fact that your illness could put America itself at risk, you have given up the ability to serve as a responsible member of a representative government. Laura Loomer says very high level sources told me Mitch McConnell is officially brain dead and machines are keeping him alive, but he is a vegetable and never coming back. So why is his life in China and sat by his side? Is she a Chinese spy? How does the wife of one of the most powerful U.S. senators just travel to China? Is she coming back from China? Who is she meeting with? Will she be there to pull the plug? I'm less concerned about that as I am about the fact that he's likely already dead and they're covering it up to prevent Thomas Massey from getting a chance to take his Senate seat. From Wonderwall, wild conspiracy theory suggests GOP is hiding Mitch McConnell's health status. Don't you love when lefties who will claim the GOP is literally Nazis, but the minute that right-wingers are like, you know, I think they're doing something shady, they're like, oh, yeah, right, sure, sure, the GOP lying? No way, that would never happen. It's like, don't you, what? Aren't you, like, arch enemies with the GOP? Don't you think that they do all of the most evil stuff ever? But in this case, it doesn't serve your interest to go with the obvious conclusion, so you're going to pretend that it's a crazy conspiracy theory. Okay. Questions still surround Mitch McConnell's mid-June health scare, leading to suspicion that Republicans are doing all they can to stall updates on the 84-year-old Kentucky senator as a political maneuver. On June 14th, McConnell was rushed to the hospital for an undisclosed reason. In early July, it was discovered that McConnell was found unconscious and had CPR administered for a potential cardiac arrest. In the 3 weeks since McConnell was admitted to the hospital, there have been no updates on his health. The latest update from McConnell's office, given on July 2nd, says Senator McConnell appreciates the outpouring of support he's receiving while he continues his recovery in the hospital. The senator continues to improve and is working closely with the staff on Kentucky and Senate matters while the Senate is out of session. Observant journalists and social media users have noted the critical date of August 3rd is approaching. If McConnell was deemed unable to serve because of his poor health or death before that date, Kentucky would hold a special election for his replacement in the United States Senate. Though the seat would assuredly go to a Republican, some have theorized the GOP fears a run from ousted Congressman and prominent Republican Trump critic Thomas Massey. Massey gained national prominence in 2025 for co-signing the petition to force a vote releasing the Epstein files, much to Donald Trump's chagrin. A conspiracy theory is spreading on social media that to avoid the special election that could be complicated by one of the sharpest thorns in MAGA's side, the GOP is hiding that McConnell is dead or otherwise unable to serve until after August 3rd. Is Mitch McConnell dead? If so, will Massey run for a seat? Tweeted influential socialist dreamer Hassan Piker. If McConnell's condition is clearly unfit for office, they'd hide that to avoid being forced to submit a resignation letter until after that date, replied independent journalist Adam Cochran. Is McConnell alive and well? Is he awake and functional? Is he a vegetable? Either way, I think they're trying to make sure we don't have an answer until August 3rd, he added. I was like, of course they would do. I mean, you saw what they did to oust Thomas Massey in the first place. You think they would just let him then immediately become a senator? No, they're willing to do anything to prevent that because it's the Israelis and the Jews in general behind this once again. Once again, we find ourselves beset by the priorities of people that aren't us. My priority would be get a senator in that actually can serve the people and isn't a fossil. Isn't a decrepit mummy. That would be my interest. And if that happens to be Thomas Massey, then great. We'll do that. But obviously, there are people out there with ulterior motives, let's just say. Again, it would be, I wouldn't say that if they didn't come out and say it in the first place, right? After all, they had to make sure that any Republican recognized the buzzsaw that was opposing Israel in any way. And of course, that's a big problem. And we'll get back to why that's such a big problem here in just a second. But I'll take a moment now to talk about flock cameras. And then we'll get back to the Eighth Front war of Israel waging war against America from inside. But first, let's go to clip number 53 here. This is a man reporting that flock cameras have now been put up in the Richland Wildlife Management National Park in Florida, where there is no traffic and no crime. So why are there flock cameras there? Let's watch.
Look around. We're standing in the middle of the Richland Wildlife Management Area. Miles and miles of Florida wilderness with no neighborhoods or shopping centers, subdivisions or traffic lights around. Just woods, hunters, fishermen, families, you know, people enjoying the outdoors the way that generations of Floridians always have. So here's my question. Why are there surveillance cameras here? Why are there license plate readers sitting at the crossroads of a wildlife management area? Who are they watching? The hunters? People exercising their Second Amendment rights? Families going camping? Fishermen headed to a boat ramp? Because it isn't just here. I recently drove to a remote boat ramp in the middle of the marsh. There wasn't a town nearby. There wasn't a shopping center, a neighborhood, just a boat ramp and surveillance cameras recording every vehicle coming and going. At what point did we decide that every trip into nature should be tracked? Every hunting and fishing trip, every drive through rural Florida. Some people will immediately say, those cameras help stop crime. They help stop human trafficking. And every one of us wants criminals caught. Every one of us wants trafficking victims rescued. But here's the question that no one seems willing to ask. How much surveillance are we willing to accept? For decades, law enforcement investigated crimes without building massive networks of cameras that record the movements of millions of law-abiding Americans. Technology can be a useful investigative tool. But it should never become a substitute for police work. It should never become a substitute for evidence. And it should never become a substitute for the constitutional liberties that Americans have always expected.
All right, so check this out. This is where these two flock cameras are that the guy in the video is talking about. Let me give you an idea of where these cameras are. This is the exact intersection of those two cameras, okay? Now let me just zoom out. Look how far away these cameras are from anything. This is just wildlife reserve. There is nothing in this area. Let me just keep zooming out. Here we have some highways. Here we have some highways. But again, there are no towns anywhere near this. So why are these flock cameras here? It doesn't make any sense at all why they would put these cameras here. And if we go and we look at the more information here, I have confirmed that these cameras are here. They are flock. They were installed by the Hernando County Sheriff's Office. They've deployed about 40 cameras across the county, including on these rural country roads. But why did they do this? Well, they say that they recover stolen vehicles, track suspects, solving crimes in rural areas, and public safety. But that doesn't make any sense, because unless there's like maybe a murder and somebody drops a body there, other than that, you're not tracking anybody and you're not tracking any crimes. This is unlawful surveillance. This just makes no sense.
And that's like just one of the huge number of examples of places where flock cameras shouldn't be, like kids' parks and like wildlife areas. Like it doesn't make any sense if they're actually being used to fight crime, which I don't think they are. I just don't think they are. I've seen absolutely no evidence that having flock cameras lowers crime or increases the rate of arrest to any degree. And I seriously doubt, you know, they ever really will be to any sizable degree. I just don't see it. I don't see the actual reason. You know, it's kind of similar to like the data centers. It's like clearly this is not for the reason they say that it is. You don't need to frantically build thousands of data centers just to do what the internet already does to a sufficient degree. There's an ulterior motive here. There's an ulterior motive with putting flock cameras everywhere, especially when you realize they don't actually lower crime at all anywhere that they're put in. And in fact, I've seen more examples of flock cameras getting the wrong person, causing the wrong person strife in their life, than actually succeeding in stopping or punishing criminals. Let's go now to clip number 46. This went totally viral in Colorado this weekend, where a woman was forced to prove her innocence when she was accused of a crime on the basis of flock camera images. Let's watch.
We have cameras everywhere in that town. You can't get a breath of fresh air in or out without us knowing.
Chrisanna Elzer learned the power of flock firsthand.
You were in town from 11:52 until 12:09. Exactly. Like I said, nothing gets in or out of the town without us knowing.
When a Colorado police officer showed up at her door holding flock snapshots of her truck.
And here's when you left. At 12:09, that's when you left town.
To get?
No, to stop at Ridge Trail.
Wait a minute.
And take a package. Well, there's no shushing. I don't need to be.
Yes, there is. I need to know where this is.
The first thing he pulled out on the body cam is that flock picture, the clear photograph of your car.
But here's your vehicle in the neighborhood many, many times, apparently casing houses, because you just can't drive through for work or visit other businesses. You can only be casing houses.
It is her. It is 100%. It is locked in. There is zero doubt. I wouldn't have come here unless I was 100% sure. 100%. It is certain. It is on video. You're obviously welcome to go to court.
Chrisanna was charged with stealing a package, but it wasn't her. The porch pirate was somebody else.
Multiple times you tried to show him your video evidence. He didn't want to see it.
Even when I called him back, he said, that's not my job.
You looked at a time of a crime. You saw my vehicle entering in the flock.
No. What I did was I did an investigation.
You called my wife a liar. You said this is back.
I have video evidence. I don't know what you want me to say.
The charges were dropped after Chrisanna spent weeks trying to get the police chief to look at her evidence. Time-stamped video from her truck and a neighbor's doorbell camera showing she wasn't at the scene of the crime.
What does it say about where we are that you feel you have to have more cameras than the police have in order to make sure you can prove yourself innocent.
It sounds like it flipped the script to you're guilty until you prove yourself innocent.
Without a Flock camera, that detective would not have been at her door. By his own admission, he pulled out the Flock picture of her car. Do you want to apologize to Chrisanna Elzer for what happened to her?
For the police misusing the tools? I don't think that I have to apologize for him.
He wasn't charged with a crime. He wasn't, I mean, other than being reprimanded for his attitude.
Sure. No, but I would tell you that, like, should I apologize for somebody misusing a tool? I don't think so.
Flock Safety Chief Communications Officer Josh Thomas.
Who's watching the watchers in these cases?
Well, the city council. The city owns the data, so city council would have the appropriate responsibility in that case. Our point of view has always been that it is not Flock's job to police the way police do their work.
Yeah, but it should be. Yeah, and the key point there is it became my job to prove my innocence. Flock cameras led Colorado police to the wrong suspect. Law enforcement agencies across the Denver metro area have touted the use of Flock cameras in recent weeks to help crack major cases, including a stolen vehicle in Adams County, a massive tow truck scam in Douglas County, and drive-by shooting in Aurora. Chrisanna Elzer, however, has had a much different story about the use of Flock cameras. It started with the first ring of her doorbell, with the guy saying, "You know why I'm here." The interaction was captured on her doorbell camera. She felt like she was already guilty in the eyes of police. "You know we have cameras in that town. You can't get a breath of fresh air in that place without us knowing, correct?" So, like, what Flock cameras seem to do, yeah, shut down Cleveland Flock cameras now show now that there's no valid contract. So this is another bizarre thing. Flock deliberately keeps up its cameras and even keeps them powered on even when the city is no longer paying for it, because basically once they get permission to put that camera there, they can continue to operate it and can sell that information to whoever they want or to federal. Like, you don't have to actually have the city running it. It just stays up and they continue to run it. James Fisback promises to ban Flock cameras statewide. It's an egregious violation of our rights. Yeah, obviously it is. And I would say the Flock cameras need to go down. Now, I'm a little bit, you know, I kind of feel like this, how I do about the warnings on July 4th about, like, turn in your neighbors for illegal fireworks. On one hand, my immediate knee-jerk reaction is like, this is America. What the hell are you telling me to snitch? What the hell are you talking about? I'm going to go buy four more fireworks now just because you said not to. But then I'm like, well, but then again, have you seen some of the people running around these days? Have you seen some of the footage of the teen takeovers? Have you seen some of the footage of the illegal immigrants, like, with total disrespect for America overall? And it's like, I want to live in a world where you don't need surveillance, where you don't need cameras on every corner, and you don't need people snitching on their neighbors. But this is the problem, isn't it? If you fill our country with illegal immigrants and then you hire DAs who refuse to put anybody in prison, and suddenly we have a massive uptick in violent crime, we do have to do something to mitigate that. The thing we should do is go back to the source and get rid of the DAs, get rid of the programs that are allowing this crime to flourish, not build a surveillance grid on top of everything else. But obviously Flock is the wrong company to do any of this, and they're not the only company. There are other companies that actually do value privacy that you could choose otherwise, but they intend for Flock, tied in with Palantir, to be the surveillance grid of the future. When we get back on the other side, I'll show you some more videos and tell you about the biggest sale we've ever had at the Alex Jones store. Biggest sale of 2026 to celebrate America's 250th birthday has been extended to tomorrow night at midnight, being massive buy one, get one deals, as well as the incredible America's 250 silver round commemorative silver coin.
And a microscopic tag be implanted in a person's body to track his every movement. There's actual discussion about that.
And often they're things you don't know what to do with. UBOs, they're called unidentified bright objects.
Can brain scans be used to determine whether a person is inclined toward criminality or violent behavior?
Who's got the brain that's going to be most susceptible to a particular kind of manipulation?
So the point is, they've been obsessed with this. It's going on. The COVID shots implanted the matrix, graphene oxide to grow. It's now being scanned. It's now being read. They were putting chips in the troops 30 years ago. The revolution's already here, is what you're saying, Jesse Beltran.
These are just chips on a size that you can no longer see. They're nano size. One's 2,000 times the width of a human hair. The graphene oxide, the silicon-based materials that have been in, we know for a fact that they were in the mRNA. We know that Dr. Ido Bachelet signed a contract with Pfizer in 2015 when he did that TEDMed talk with a trillion robots in a 1cc syringe, and how he teaches his students how to, once they're in a host, how to control them with RF emissions.
And you heard Colin saying 21 years ago that, oh, yeah, when we're doing scans, we find all these chips, these bright objects, ha, 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 wonder who put them there. But as you said, you've been doing this 20 years, and about 10 years ago, you began to go away, not seeing chips anymore, but just liquid emulsion nanotech. Here you are 6 months ago or more scanning me. Let's go to Alex Jones getting scanned.
So if you put that camera in there, you see how it says probably silicone? That means it's an electronic component. And it's not unusual to find that in the posterior ear area.
So wait, I got a higher reading than him?
No, his was higher than yours.
Okay,
yeah,
yes,
yeah, but you did get a positive reading there. So you are getting the you know, base of the neck is what we typically see. Scapula area. What we're finding is after post-COVID, this is very typical. We're completely bombarded by this stuff.
From your own research, there are compounds naturally in nature that just do absolutely incredible things that will draw out these type of things. But you guys have come up with one with scientists that adds these special sea minerals in that then even drags it out even more. And so I have been taking this, the dreams I've had, my skin, my health. What it's done is absolutely insane. Get masterpiece.com. Matt Hazen, tell us what this does, and people can get 10% off when they follow the URL, getmasterpiece.com, or use promo code Alex when you're there on the site, because this is really special.
Zeolite is an incredible mineral that is known as what's called the master binder. And what that means is it's known to pick up every type of forever chemical, toxin, toxic heavy metal there is, including fluoride. So when you see charcoal or carbon or clays for binders, you don't see that they will pick up fluoride. Zeolite's different. Zeolite also gets the fluoride. That's a very big deal. It is great at removing these environmental toxins from our body. Masterpiece is the highest grade sea mineral plasma solution. It is basically isotonic, the same mineral composition as your blood plasma. So the sea minerals are being carried in by the nanometer, sub-nanometer size clinoptilolite zeolite. And once the toxin hits the zeolite, it releases and displaces the mineral. People don't feel bad. There's no normal detoxing reaction.
Everybody needs to go to getmasterpiece.com. You get 10% off by using that URL automatic when you go. There's promo code Alex as well. Getmasterpiece.com.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Thomas Massey, is America ready for my term limit legislation titled Three Strokes and You're Out? Only three? Has he only had three strokes? I think you're undercounting it. I've seen three. I've seen Mitch McConnell go blank at least three times. All right, folks, we still have a lot to cover here in this final segment of War Room Live. And I do got to tell you that the biggest sale in the history of the AlexJonesStore.com is on right now and has been extended till tomorrow night at midnight. You get buy one, get one deals on the methylene blue tincture. Buy one of those, get a second one absolutely free, as well as the bovine colostrum plus and the Shilajit complex gummies, or rather the capsules. The Shilajit complex capsules are buy one, get one absolutely free. So BOGO sups for the methylene blue, the Shilajit complex, and the colostrum plus, all of which are incredible on their own. Combined, they are super powered. Up to 60% off supplements site-wide, 50% off apparel as well. We also have the America's 250th silver round, 1 troy ounce, 99.999 fine silver commemorative round. The VIPs are getting that for under $100. It is a collector's item. Add it to your collection of the special edition silver coins. We also have a giveaway vehicle. Every purchase you make at thealexjonesstore.com enters you to win a 2026 Dodge Charger and a 2026 Ram 2500 Laramie and $20,000 in cash. This week only, you get 250 entries for every dollar you spend. So it's been extended 2 days. This sale now ends July 7th at midnight. It is the biggest sale of 2026. To celebrate America's 250th birthday, we have extended it for two more days. Absolutely massive discounts. And of course, you keep us on the air, in the fight, and expanding in the face of endless persecution. TheAlexJonesStore.com/Harrison to let them know who sent you. Let's go now to clip number 40. This is giant bummer and once more evidence of the Israeli control over our system of government that most of us didn't even know this was happening until it was almost too late, and then a desperate attempt to prevent the merging of the Israeli and American military and intelligence was defeated in the Senate, in the Congress, and is now continuing. Here's Kim Iverson breaking it down, clip number 40. Let's watch.
Unfortunately, the amendment to halt the merger of the U.S. and Israeli militaries together has failed. They have shoved this into the National Defense Act, and it will pass. This whole idea, which Netanyahu even says was his idea, this was his plan. This did not come from our Congress members. He actually put it forward. They said, okay, we'll do whatever you want, our dear leader Bibi, and they put it into this bill. The goal of this, according to Netanyahu, is to end U.S. aid to Israel. Now, you might think, oh, that's a great thing. We do want to end U.S. aid to Israel, right? The workaround is to no longer need aid from the United States military because you will just become the United States military. Netanyahu said, rather than being dependent on the U.S. military, we become partners. We become partners. We share everything. Here's the article from Responsible Statecraft saying Congress has refused to even allow a full House vote on a provision that would pave the way for an unprecedented integration of the U.S. and Israeli military industrial complexes. After no debate on Monday, the Rules Committee chose to reject a bipartisan amendment introduced by Reps Ro Khanna and Thomas Massie that would have stripped the United States-Israel Defense Technology Cooperation Initiative from the bill. This provision they wanted to squelch creates an executive agent within the Department of Defense whose sole responsibility is furthering U.S. and Israeli military tech integration across nearly every facet of the defense process. It even specifically says in this provision that we will source and look for as much Israeli tech to integrate into our military as possible. That is a bad idea. That's the worst thing I've ever heard of. So if you don't want that, call your congressman, call your senator, tell them you absolutely want them to oppose that bill unless they strike that from it, that you will not live in a nation that is beholden to another foreign nation. I was going to say something much more grotesque, but whatever. I mean, it's just so obvious. Israel has taken over. We're not a sovereign country anymore.
That's Kim Iverson. I completely agree. It's far past time we declare independence from Israel. No taxation without lack of genocide. I don't know. It's not very catchy, but we've got to come up with some sort of slogan. And without a slogan, how are we supposed to make the case that, no, we should not allow the Prime Minister of Israel to commandeer the American intelligence and military apparatus for their own ends? Because that's all that would be happening here. And there's like 10 billion reasons why this would be a bad idea, but we can at least go to one here. This is clip number 10. This is former U.S. War College Director Dr. Alan Sabrowski talking about how 9/11 was in fact a Mossad operation, or at the very least, they had reams of intelligence about the attack forthcoming that they did not provide to America. So why would we open up our military and our intelligence to a government who seems perfectly willing to withhold information from us, even if it does immense damage to us, if they think it benefits them? And this is far from the first time this has happened. Of course, when you talk about Lebanon, people love referencing, oh, we're getting revenge for the 1982 or 1985, you know, truck attack on U.S. Marines. Now, when that actually happened, Ronald Reagan himself exited the Middle East because of that. He didn't feel like it was a good idea to try to get revenge for these people. He thought, this is an insane group of psychopaths. I better just get out of here because it's not worth any more American blood. It wasn't worth the blood that's already been spilt. But this is constantly brought up. Well, that's another example where Mossad had plenty of information about the attack. They knew it was coming. They even saw the truck bomb before it went to the barracks, and they did not alert their American counterparts and allowed the attack to happen because they thought that if the Americans lost a bunch of Marines in Lebanon, it would keep us there for a long time. Luckily, Ronald Reagan didn't actually fall for that and withdrew as a consequence of it. But routinely in the history of the relationship between America and Israel, Israel has had intelligence that they could provide us to prevent, you know, this from happening. Oh, yeah. And then he almost got assassinated. What a coincidence. What a crazy coincidence that is. So let's go now to clip number 10 here. Former U.S. War College director, Dr. Alan Sabrowski, claims 9/11 was a Mossad operation. Let's watch.
Well, it's not what you think.
Hey, Devin. I have had long conversations over the past 2 weeks with contacts at the Army War College, at headquarters Marine Corps, and I've made it absolutely clear in both cases that it is 100% certain that 9/11 was a Mossad operation. And what I show them immediately afterwards, the third building at the World Trade Center going down, WTC-7. And they look at that, and I said, now you understand that if one of the buildings was wired for demolition, all of them were wired for demolition. And what Americans need to understand, they did it. They did it. And if they do understand that, Israel will flat ass disappear from this earth. 9/11 has led directly 60,000 Americans dead and wounded. God knows how many hundreds of thousands of people in other countries that we've killed or wounded or made homeless. If Americans ever know that Israel did this, they're going to scrub them off the earth, and they're not going to give a rat's ass what the cost is. They are not going to care. They will do it. The Zionists are playing this as truly an all-or-nothing exercise, because if they lose this one, if the American people ever realize what's happened, they're done. It'll be a bloody, brutal war, and they're gone. I mean, it's not even going to be a close contest. Three buildings went down. The third was not hit by a plane. It was wired for controlled demolition. Therefore, all of them were wired for controlled demolition. You know, what I have done when I presented it to these people, and I said, just look at this. Look at this picture. You know, I'm not going to give you an argument. Just look at it. And they look at the film, and without exception, they come back and they say, they did it, didn't they? I said, yep, they did. They did 9/11.
This world is not what you think it is.
Back when it first happened, I didn't know who did it, but it was obvious to me in my time in the Marine Corps and doing demolition that it was definitely a controlled blast, controlled drop. You couldn't deny it.
So we have more. If you want to know more, a family of the 9/11 hijacker Zayed Jarrah has been confirmed to be Israeli spies. In 2008, Lebanese authorities, aided by Hezbollah intelligence, arrested Ali al-Jarrah and his brother Yosef al-Jarrah in the Bekaa Valley. Ali confessed to working as a Mossad asset for 25 years since 1983. He provided reports, clandestine photos of Hezbollah, Palestine groups, Syrian movements, road convoys, and used tradecraft like satellite phones, dead drops, and cover trips to Europe and Israel for debriefings. He reportedly received over $300,000. So one of the hijackers themselves, these supposed hijackers, had family, multiple family members, his brother and cousin, who were active Mossad operatives, which would lead you to assume that so was he. And of course, we know about the dancing Israelis who were confirmed to be Mossad operatives. They admitted they were there to watch the event. Then you have the E team, you know, the Israeli art students doing the job, doing the project in the exact floors where the airplane hit. I mean, it really goes on and on. But whether it's 9/11 or, you know, any of the assassinations that Israel has carried out, I mean, you can go all the way up to October 7th and see the enormous evidence of the false flag nature of that attack, where they knew it was coming. They allowed it to happen. They stood down for hours on end. We have more and more information about that, including the video of the, you know, generals actually ordering it, the testimony of IDF soldiers saying that they were, you know, recalled and not allowed to respond to the attack, that it was all, you know, a giant setup. This is how it goes. And, you know, I've talked about it before, things like Rise and Kill First, a book I'm reporting on, doing podcasts for NXR, Off Limits News. If you search that on YouTube, you can find it. I'm doing the Rise and Kill First. It's also on my X account at Harrison H. Smith. And in that one, you know, it's not a suggestion. It's not a guess. Routinely, you hear about the actual strategy that goes into starting wars through false flags. Again, they're not exactly shy about it. There was like a series of terror bombings that Israel carried out, and the whole thing is comical in its, you know, just how like typical it is. Like the Israelis are trying to kill all the Palestinians in Lebanon who they've driven out of their homelands. They are in Lebanon, and the Lebanese people are not happy with them. They're causing trouble. So the Israelis are teaming up with the Catholics in Lebanon to do this. But the Israelis create a organization called something like, you know, Lebanese Against Foreign Occupation. The you know, Lebanese group of anti-foreign people. And it's like, okay, it's literally Israelis. It's literally foreigners calling themselves the Anti-Foreigner Brigade and then, you know, blowing up truck bombs by Palestinians. And the whole point was that the Americans had told the Israelis, we are not going to back an invasion of Lebanon unless the Palestinians attack first. So the Israelis go, okay, let's get the Palestinians to attack first. And so they start carrying out terror bombings, just trying to goad the Palestinians into responding so they can take that response and go, look, they attacked us, and then launch the invasion. Like, this is just how it works. This idea of casus belli, or, you know, who started it, it's like actually a very important thing in like geopolitics. Like, they go through extreme measures to portray what is at the end of the day just basic, you know, conquering of a land, just taking things over, just we want it, so we're going to take it and we'll kill anybody who resists. Like, that's at the heart of everything that Israel does, but it always has to be couched as if they're defending themselves. They never are. They're always the ones starting the fights. They're always the ones, you know, spinning up terrorist organizations to carry out attacks, to get the Palestinians to respond in kind, so then they can then do a full-fledged invasion with America's backing, since to the wider public, it looks like, oh, the Palestinians just attacked Israel for no reason, when in reality, quietly behind the scenes, Israel has been poking the bear for, you know, months on end. Luckily, in that case, the Palestinians never actually responded. They, you know, knew what was happening and were able to just withstand the terror bombings from the Israelis. But time and time again, you see this. It's not like a, you know, conspiracy theory. You got to be really into this stuff to like be looking into this. This is the way geopolitics works. They want to go to war with somebody. They can't just go to war with them. They have to have a reason. So they have to create a reason. So they fund Hamas, like Benjamin Netanyahu admitted to doing, giving Qatar millions and millions of dollars to deliver to Hamas every month to make sure that Hamas was the, you know, more powerful force. And you see this over and over again in Israeli history. Like the Palestinian, the PLO under Yasser Arafat, they were not a Muslim group. They were a nationalistic group, and they did not focus on the Muslim religious aspect. So when Hamas came around and they were focused on a idea of Islamic power rather than nationalistic power, then they supported Hamas, thinking that Hamas, the religious people, would be a good counter to the more a religious political people in the PLO. It's this constant game that they're playing to spin up organizations, try to counter the other organizations that they're going to war with. It's a very, very, very tried and true practice of the Israelis that they're very, very good at. And we're supposed to be giving them direct access to our intelligence. We're supposed to be giving them direct, unrestrained access to our military secrets. They have time and time again proven their willingness to carry out massacres against their own people, against Americans, against Palestinians. They're a murderous cabal of psychopaths that should be nowhere near American power and yet somehow have obtained absolute control of it. This is an existential, this is the existential crisis of modern America. Sam Tripoli says, I do find it interesting that people celebrate the Lebanon pager attacks as some incredible intelligence operation while simultaneously acting shocked and upset at the suggestion that Charlie Kirk could have possibly been assassinated by exploding by an exploding microphone. I'm telling you, as I go through Rise and Kill First, as I go through the history of the, you know, Israeli assassination program, their first cell phone assassination attempt was in like the late 80s. They have been building cell phones to assassinate people and, you know, devices to explode against people's heads for 50 years at this point. They're very, very good at it. Mel, Village Crazy Lady, responds saying, the state of Israel has committed so many assassinations in its 78 years of existence that the wiki page detailing them has to be divided into decades, yet millions of Americans act like it's just crazy talk to say Israel is responsible for assassinations on American soil, too. List of Israeli assassinations here. And maybe I'll just, you know, give you a little taste of, you know, how this works and where this will go, if we allow it. Cause as I explained, I think the last, show that we did, I read a little bit from Rise and Kill First, but there's something called the Scholes dossier that becomes, relevant. So basically you have this scandal in Israel where it's, where the authorities, stop a bus hijacking with some Palestinian teenagers. They arrest the teenagers alive and well, and then they beat them to death right there at the scene of the crime. And then they lie about it and they say, oh, this must have been a mob of Israelis that beat these guys. We got there, we tried to render aid, but it was too late already. Unfortunately for them, a photographer had taken a picture of the young men being captured alive, and they saw this guy take a picture and they ran over and he luckily, very sneakily, got the film out, put it in his sock and handed over a different roll of film. And so then he was able to go and publish this photo and say, the Israeli government's lying. These guys were not beaten to death by a mob. They were not, this was not a tragic accident. They were arrested, handcuffed, alive and well, taken behind a shed and beaten to death by the IDF. So they're just proven absolutely to have lied, proven absolutely to have carried out this, you know, ad hoc execution, you know, without a trial or anything else. But they got away with it. How did they get away with it? Well, it says in late May, Shalom had met with Yossi Gisenar and their legal counsels in Gisenar's room in the Grand Beach Hotel, Tel Aviv. Together, they began compiling a list of the dead. They worked from their files and from memory, writing down names, places, and dates of people killed by the Mossad, Amman, and the Shin Bet in the years before the Ashkelon hijacking. So the Ashkelon hijacking was that incident I just laid out where they beat the two kids to death. We sat there for a long time. Everything went into the document with Avram's approval, said Gisenar. On the list, there were four Iranian diplomats the Mossad had allowed to be tortured and executed in Beirut by the Falangist butcher Robert the Cobra Hatem. There were the targets of Amman's Unit 504, who died naturally by swallowing a pillow and were buried face down. There was the operation by the Shin Bet in June 1984 of the village of Bidya, where 15 operatives arrived in three Mercedes sedans at a garage owned by the local Shiite commander, who was pulled into one of his cars and was told, according to an eyewitness, you can choose how to die, his bullet-ready bottle. So basically, they have just like all of these, you know, assassinations, extrajudicial killings they've carried out. And so they compiled this list. It was by no means a complete list, just three pages and 67 names long, and covered only deaths in Lebanon, the West Bank, and Gaza, but it was a devastating compilation. Gisenar called it the Scholes dossier. Ostensibly, it was a legal document meant to demonstrate that Shalom's order to kill the two Ashkelon hijackers was both routine and acceptable, part of a sanctioned program of extrajudicial killing. In reality, it was pure blackmail, an implicit threat that if Shalom and his allies were indicted, they would take others with them, including prime ministers. We understood very well the significance of the Scholes dossier they'd laid on the table, the former cabinet member said. It was clear to us that we had to stop the general hysteria and make sure the Shin Bet personnel involved did not have to go to court. It was a shocking mover, but an effective one. So this is the way it works, right? this is the way intelligence actually operates. If they want to kill somebody, they kill somebody. If they happen to get caught killing somebody, they don't pay the price because they've got all of the records of all the other people they've killed. And all of their members of the assassination squads have since become founders of the country and prime ministers. And if this were to be known that they were all just ruthless assassins killing innocent people on a regular basis, that wouldn't look so good. So I guess now you're incentivized to cover up the murder that's happening. So now imagine this in an international level. Now imagine Israel has access to all of America's information, intelligence information, and many things that we've done, you know, with them. Yeah, how lies protected America's Secret Service 3 decades after security agents covered up the killing of Palestinian hijackers. The incident continues to make waves. Yeah, but nothing really happened, right? Yeah, nothing actually came of this. Nobody was actually ever punished for it. Because, of course, the prime minister at the time was one of the assassins that would have been exposed in the Scholes dossier of having a hand in murdering a gigantic number of people. So now imagine this on an international level. Imagine, you know, Israel lies to America with bad information, getting us to, I don't know, bomb an elementary school full of little girls. And then they have all of that information and we want to do something later. Then go, well, we have all this information that shows that you deliberately bombed that little girl's school. That would be kind of embarrassing, wouldn't it? I mean, there's no end to the blackmail, the deception, the spycraft that this would open up to the Israelis, who have proven time and time again to be unreliable allies, often using their access to intelligence to set up America for disaster in order to take advantage of that disaster, whether it's the barracks bombing in Beirut. They knew about that, didn't tell us. Even October 7th, they knew about that, didn't tell anybody, allowed it to happen, then carried out the Hannibal directive, then lied about it continuously, constantly, everywhere, continually to this day, about the babies in ovens. And I even have video of, you know, Anthony Blinken spreading this lie that I assume they all know were lies, because I knew it was a lie. I can't imagine they know more than I do. But these are the people that we are now opening up our intelligence to. 9/11, the barrack attacks in Lebanon, October 7th. Every single time, Israeli intelligence has had more than enough information to stop the plot before it happens. Yeah, Ehud Barak was one of the people carrying out the assassinations during Operation Spring in Lebanon. He dressed up like a woman and went in and just like killed a bunch of people. And of course, he's the, you know, prime minister and is still walking around there free today. Best friends with Jeffrey Epstein. They're all in it together. And we're now talking about opening up our intelligence directly to these people who are just the spawn of Satan. They are hell on earth. And they're dragging us down with them. Why would we give access to these people? They cannot be trusted. They are not trustworthy. That's been proven. We have to learn that lesson or they will destroy us. Pretty simple.
We're extending America's 250th mega sale, the biggest in the history of the AlexJonesStore.com. That means this Monday the 6th and Tuesday the 7th at midnight central, the biggest sales ever. Buy one, get one free. Up to 60% off the best-selling supplements, Patriot apparel, 50% off, and more. Take action now at the AlexJonesStore.com.
Have you noticed all the big universities and corporate media and governments around the world run down America all day? That's because the American system stands against their globalist system. And as the public figures that out, their corrupt, tyrannical, oppressive, communistic, anti-human death cult can't compete with what America stands for. And we stand in the shoes, on the shoulders of our forebears. Whether you're black, white, Hispanic, old, young, if you love liberty and freedom, and if you want to be free, and if you want to control your own destiny, you believe in meritocracy, then America is for you. It's under attack because the idea of it stands in the way of the enemy. And America is a dream. Just like a dream to get married or a dream to start a business or a dream to write a poem or write a song. And when you do that, those dreams come true. But we have to breathe life into those dreams. They want to kill those dreams. Don't let them break your will. Be proud to be an American and know people around the world still love America and understand it's the globalists that have hijacked us. And we're in the process of taking our country back from the Chi-Coms and the Israel lobby and the globalists and Hollywood and the left and all of them. And that's why it's so important to support the next leg in the info war at AlexJonesLive.com. And, of course, at the AlexJonesStore.com with the widest selection of Patriot apparel, the best supplements, collectible knives,
the best water filtration, and more that will empower and enrich your life while keeping this beacon of truth on the air as we accelerate into the future and as the Great Awakening prepares the final defeats of the globalists and their Great Reset. I salute you all. This is 1776 2.0. We're unstoppable together. God bless you all. Take action now.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.